Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young minds faster than bacteria. Kids wanna act like what they see in the cinema. Whatever happened to the values of humanity?
All those insecurities that have held me down for so long. I can't say I found a cure for these, but at least I know them, so they're not so strong. You look for your dreams in heaven, but what the hell are you supposed to do when they can't true?
Listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A survey released August 23rd reveals most United States Border Patrol agents and customs inspectors do not believe they have the tools to fight terrorism. The American Federation of Government Employees reported that although 91% of workers surveyed said stopping terrorists from entering the country is a very important aspect of their job, 64% say they haven't been given the tools, training, and support needed to do that job. Charles Scholader, president of the National Homeland Security Council, said that the concerns of the survey have been brought to the Homeland Security Department, but often it seems the department is more concerned with the appearance of employees and not their ability to do an efficient job.
The emphasis should be on supporting the employees, making sure that they have all of the equipment, tools, and training they need to do the job the right way.
It's day three of a five-day strike by healthcare workers throughout Washington state. 1,700 nurses and medical technicians are seeing their healthcare threatened by their employer, Group Health Cooperative. SEIU District 1199 Northwest called the strike in response to company demands that employees' premium costs increase by 12%. Chris Barton is a 30-year veteran nurse and secretary treasurer of the local.
The amount of money that is being spent on the whole effort of trying to maintain patient care during a strike is phenomenal. So it's pretty clear to us that this is not just an economic issue also for the employer. This is one in which they want to change the whole dynamic of how people pay for health care here. They see this as a strategic move to be able to handle their health care costs at the same time just passing that burden on to the workers.
Barton says that in the past, nurses accepted lower pay for better benefits and believes her union is not only standing up for itself, but drawing the line in the sand for all employees whose health care is being threatened.
Workers at the Southern Minnesota Beet Sugar Cooperative, who had been locked out of their jobs for 3 weeks, will return to work today after voting to approve a new 3-year contract yesterday. The 220 workers at the Renville Cooperative showed up for work 3 weeks ago to find the doors locked. It wasn't until a mediator stepped in that the two sides were able to sit down and hammer out a new contract. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Businesses may still be reluctant to open up positions for full-time help, but students are having an easier time finding jobs this summer. That's the finding of a new report released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Between April and July, the number of employed 16 to 24-year-olds grew by 2.3 million, better than last year's increase of 2.1 million. The new hires raised the number of working youth to 21.4 million. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I've been a lifelong Republican since I was old enough to vote, and I thought that Bush would be a fiscally conservative individual. I feel betrayed. I don't believe that a government should be engaging in reckless spending, recklessly stretching the military to the point of breaking, recklessly trying to stretch, alter, and amend the Constitution, which this country was based on. And that's why I'm going to vote for John Kerry.
Move On PAC is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Time for another report from the wide, 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 wild world of sports. Today's feature, where are we? I don't mean where does your team rank in the standings. In today's corporatized sports world, the question of where are we is a literal one, as in what city are we in? Stadiums, arenas, and so forth no longer bear recognizable names, but instead are branded with corporate logos that are anywhere and nowhere USA. For example, SBC. What the hell is it? It's the nondescript logo of a telephone company that stretches from Texas to Michigan to California. So if you're at SBC Park, where are you? The San Francisco Giants recently sold the name of their ballpark to this Anyplace Corporation. There's also the SBC Center. Where are you? At the arena of the San Antonio Spurs basketball team. In either case, SBC's bland corporate logo tells you nothing about the team or the city. It's just another symbol for corporate money. AmeriQuest Field, FedEx Forum, Pepsi Center, American Airlines Arena, Wachovia Center, Invesco Field, Reliance Stadium, Nationwide Arena, M&T Bank Stadium, Staples Center, Phillips Arena. Where are we? In pro sports, more than half of the facilities, most built with taxpayer funds, now have corporate names plastered all over them. The corporations have paid $3.6 billion to team owners to put their brands on these places. Money that, believe it or not, is tax deductible for the corporation, so we subsidize the branding. The corporate rationale is that naming deals are good advertising. Continually seeing our name, says a spokesman for Petco, which recently bought the naming rights to the ballpark of the San Diego Padres, will click with people and say, I want to shop there. This is Jim Hightower saying, oh yeah, after watching a Padres game, I always say, I think I'll run out to Petco and buy a rat terrier.
My name is James, and I want to tell you how a friend of mine changed my life. After my wife passed away, I found myself spending more and more time alone. I kept up with the daily business of living, but didn't get out as much. Didn't see friends as much. That's when I met a new friend, Sassy. Let me tell you about her. First of all, she can perform miracles. She's only a year old, weighs only 9 pounds, but she can jump up 5 times her own height. But the most impressive miracle is what a difference she's made in my life. She's my cat. I named her Sassy because I had a cat named Sassy when I was a little boy. I shared everything with that cat. What I've realized is that it doesn't matter if you're 8 or 80. We all need friends. I found my best friend, Sassy, at the ASPCA.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. The 25th of August here, 69 days to regime change. Tom Hartman with you, broadcasting live coast to coast and border to border. A lot in the news today. Looks like John Kerry's taking the fight to George Bush. By the way, our number, 1-866-889-8894. The website, www.tomhartman.com. Drop into our chat room if you'd like. And join the lively conversation that always happens for the 3 hours of our program here today. Democrat John Kerry. See, this is the beginning, in my opinion, of the blowback. The beginning of the blowback. And I just have a feeling this is going to be real significant. You will recall, well, actually, probably most of you don't recall, but you recall the stories about that time back in 1954, as I recall it was, that Joseph Walsh took on Joe McCarthy. Joe McCarthy, of course, had been the Republican champion. You know, well, for example.
Our job as Americans and as Republicans is to dislodge the traitors from every place where they have been sent to do their traitorous work.
Yeah, dislodge those traitors. Well, that was, you know, what he said he was doing. And it ultimately, his hysteria around this came back to haunt him, much as I suspect the his hysteria and his lies, Joe McCarthy's just plain old flat-out lies about people. He finally made the mistake of taking on Joseph Welch. And let me just share a little piece of that with you, because, number one, it's a marvelous piece of history, and number two, this, I think, should be the game plan, and in fact is. I got a great news story to tell you about, you know, right after this. This from the McCarthy Army hearings. First of all, Joseph Welch, a lawyer here, speaking before the to Joe McCarthy.
Until this moment, Senator, I think I never really gauged your cruelty or your recklessness.
I never really gauged your cruelty or your recklessness. McCarthy had just accused this guy's assistant of being a communist.
Little did I dream you could be so reckless and so cruel as to do an injury to that lad. It is, I regret to say, equally true that I fear he shall always bear a scar needlessly inflicted by you. If it were in my power to forgive you for your reckless cruelty, I would do so. I like to think I'm a gentleman, but your forgiveness will have to come from someone other than me.
It's from 1954, the 9th of June, Joseph Welch responding to Joe McCarthy, claiming that basically a kid on his staff was a communist.
Let us not assassinate this lad further, Senator. Look, you've done enough. Have you no sense of decency, sir? At long last, have you left no sense of decency?
I know this hurts you, Mr. Welch.
So this was what brought down Joe McCarthy.
Senator, I think it hurts you too, sir.
So yeah, Senator, I think it hurts you too, sir. And this is where it's coming back. And McCarthy trying to defend himself.
And Mr. Welch talks about any sense of decency. I have heard you and everyone else talk so much about laying the truth upon the table. That when I heard, I'm completely phoning Mr. Welch, I've listened to you now for a long time, to say now before sundown, you must get these people out of government. So that I just want to have it very clear.
It's Joe McCarthy speaking.
Very clear that you were not so serious about that when you tried to recommend this man for this committee.
And Welch again responds.
Mr. McCarthy, I will not discuss this further with you. You have sat within 6 feet of me and could have asked me about Fred Fisher. You have seen fit to bring it out. And if there is a God in heaven, it will do neither you nor your cause any good. I will not discuss it further. I will not ask Mr. Cohn any more witnesses. You, Mr. Chairman, may, if you will, call the next witness.
In other words, that's it. That's it. He called his bluff. Joseph Welch finally called Joe McCarthy's bluff and pointed and demonstrated to the world that, you know, not only was he an alcoholic coward, but he was a liar, a serial liar, and a fearmonger. At least Joe McCarthy told his own lies. I mean, you know, well, he had Roy Cohn there with him and all that, but at least he stood up and now you got George Bush, and this is a long pattern with George Bush. He did the same thing with Ann Richards, with a whispering campaign in Texas. Ann Richards had hired a couple of gay people on her staff, and she was actually quite proud of it. She thought that was a demonstration of inclusiveness. And a third party that George Bush said, oh, I condemn this. A third party went on the attack and started attacking Ann Richards for being a promoter of the homosexual agenda. And the attacks in Texas, you know, of course, the attacks were so slashing that it stuck. And George Bush won the election to the surprise of many people because he was way behind. Same thing against John McCain. George Bush was behind in the 2000 primary against John McCain. And then he comes out, not him, but a third party group. He can say, "Hey, it wasn't me." He just kind of stands on the sidelines. Third party group. And so, in both those cases, the attacks came late enough in the campaign that Ann Richards and John McCain really didn't have time to respond. And here now, these things have come early enough that now the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Chicago Tribune, reputable journalists, good, solid, not, it's the liberal press. No, serious journalists have gone out and found where these people, these so-called Swift Boat veterans, either their statements have been lies, they've been distortions, or they've even contradicted themselves repeatedly. I mean, there's no there, right? And now they got this book out, that's published by this publishing company that's owned in part or supported in part by Richard Mellon Scaife, the guy who financed the hunting of President Clinton, and it's a cesspool. So how do you respond? Well, the same way John Kerry did when he was a Swift Boat commander, you point the boat at the enemy, as he pointed out yesterday. And here, this the story from Reuters this morning. Just came out, Dateline Crawford, Texas. Democrat John Kerry will dispatch two fellow Vietnam veterans to President Bush's secluded Texas, I would say, dude ranch, on Wednesday to press him to condemn television advertisements accusing Kerry of lying about his wartime service. The move comes one day after it was disclosed that a top lawyer for Bush's reelection campaign has been providing legal advice to the group behind the ads, the so-called Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. Now, who's he sending? Kerry is sending to Crawford former Senator Max Cleland of Georgia, a frequent companion of Kerry's on the campaign trail and a fellow Vietnam War veteran who lost three limbs during the war. Cleland and former Army Green Beret Jim Rassman, whose life was saved by Kerry during a Vietnam War firefight, will try to deliver to George Bush a letter protesting the ads to Bush at his heavily guarded so-called ranch, former pig farm, now dude ranch, whatever you want to call it, Kerry aides said. The Kerry letter, signed by at least seven Democratic senators who have served in the military, calls on Bush to, quote, recognize this blatant attempt at character assassination and publicly condemn it. I can tell you right now, Bush is not going to do that, because this is his mode of operation. This is how he won the governorship against Ann Richards. This is how he won the primaries against John McCain. And this is how he hopes to win the presidency now. He's got nothing to run on. And so he has to destroy his opponent. Personally. With lies. Through third parties so that he can claim he had nothing to do with it. Cleland, Max Cleland, said Bush, quote, owes it to every soldier and veteran in the nation to stop condoning their smears through his silence. And then Reuters notes, Cleland lost his 2002 re-election bid after a bitter campaign in which Republicans questioned his patriotism. Bush did not intervene then, and Kerry spokesman Phil Singer said what happened to Cleland in 2002 is similar to what is going on today against Kerry. Remarkable. Excuse me. Remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. I've got a little more information about this. Some just really rather startling facts and statistics. We'll get into that in the second hour of the program. I have a few other stories I want to share with you. At the bottom of this hour, we're going to have on Dennis Weaver to talk about economics. If you remember Chester from Gunsmoke, Sam McLeod, and many other roles that Dennis has played, he's going to come on and talk about sustainable systems and economics. In the meantime, we've got a couple of other things here. Also, as I mentioned, our phone number, 1-866-889-8894. News to this in the Wall Street Journal today. I've been telling you this for 2 years. For 2 years, I've been saying on the air, obesity in the United States, by and large, is being caused by corn syrup, in my opinion. Yeah, and you look at the science, you look at the statistics, and it just seems to me that that's the case. And here we have this article by Thomas Burton and Betsy McKay, A major study of 5,200 nurses links soft drink consumption to a nationwide diabetes epidemic. Harvard School of Public Health did this. It was published in the Journal of American Medical Association. Sugar-sweetened beverages and soft drinks are linked to weight gain as well as the onset of type 2 diabetes, which has gone from just over 6 million diabetics in 92, which was just after they started adding high-fructose corn syrup to soft drinks, up to nearly 13 million now, over 13 million. So that's coming around, that's coming around. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Jerry in Tennessee is on the line. Hey, Jerry, we're getting up close against a break. Is it a quickie?
Yes, I just want to make a quick comment.
Sure.
Both of them are throwing a lot of dirt politics on both sides.
I've heard no dirt coming out of John Kerry.
Yeah, well,
I've heard none.
He comes up with lies also, like the president does. And
oh yeah, like what, Jerry?
Well, like when he talks, he gives speeches. I have an idea.
I have an idea. That's a lie. Come on, Jerry. If you're going to earn your $50 from the RNC, you got to do better than that.
Okay, I got an idea and I got a plan. Hey, I heard that from Nixon.
Yeah, well, Nixon did have a plan. Nixon actually did have a plan. It wasn't a good plan, but he had a plan. I mean, yeah. Come on, I have a plan. That's not a lie. Give me a break. Jerry, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Our Bush bumper sticker for the day. Deja voodoo all over again.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. With the continuing erosion of the middle class and the separation between the rich and poor increasing at an alarming rate as America's middle class vanishes, I refuse to lie down and watch our great democracy be replaced by a corporate aristocracy. That's why I wrote What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. In this new book, I present a striking call to action and outline what hardworking citizens can do to win back the power we're supposed to command under the United States Constitution. Now, more than ever, we citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president and the author of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson. If we are to continue to be the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles and, almost more important, we must be led by someone who understands and believes in the people, not the powerful with deep pockets. My new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, is available in bookstores everywhere.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Hey, California, where is your tax money going? To Walmart, of course. A new study released by UC Berkeley reveals that the low wages paid at Walmart stores forces employees to accept about $86 million annually in public assistance programs. That includes $32 million annually in health-related service and $54 million per year in services such as food stamps and subsidized housing. Walmart employees in that state earn on average 31% less than workers in the retail sector as a whole.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a...
Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he a guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It doesn't matter what they do. All that matters is my relationship to you.
And welcome back. Yep, looks like soft drinks are making people fat. It's not just soft drinks, it's the corn syrup. I'm telling you, 2 years ago, Louise and I just started reading labels, took all the corn syrup out of our diet, and it was amazing. We got healthier, we lost weight. Enough about that. It is political, actually, because the reason that there's corn syrup out there is because the corn industry has gotten billions of dollars. There's about four or five huge multinational ag companies gotten billions of dollars in welfare from the federal government. And that's why there's so much corn syrup around instead of cane sugar. But anyhow, let's go to the phones. 1-866-889-8894. Paul in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I ran across an interesting tidbit on the Internet earlier today. I know you have the October surprise contest.
We do, yeah. And I think we're up to like 33 entries now.
Yeah. Well, apparently on September 20th, the dictator of Pakistan, General Musharraf, they call him president, but he's basically just a general,
right.
Is coming to the United States for a 3-day visit. And in the Asia Times, they're suggesting that at that time he's going to announce the capture, of a high-profile target, some al-Qaeda thing in a big, whether he's addressing the United Nations or something else, basically, to coincide with Bush's campaign.
Surprise, surprise! Yeah.
So anyway, it's interesting that Pakistan is never in the press. They never call it a dictatorship, which it is.
Yeah, no, it very much is. I mean, the guy came to power in a military coup, overthrew a democratically elected president. But he's our buddy. He's our buddy. And but at the same time, we're interested in overthrowing military dictators so that we can bring democracy to countries. I don't know if you've noticed George Bush running ads that now we've got two new democracies in the world, Iraq and Afghanistan. Even though we only control two cities now in Afghanistan, the Taliban is back. The opium poppy crop is bigger than ever before. We've lost six cities now in Iraq totally to the other side, various other sides, to fundamentalists. And anyway, we could go on and on about that. Paul, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good point. Let's move along here. 1-866-889-8894. Armin in Sarasota, Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin.
Yeah, that's how Bush defines democracy. What it really is progressing feudalism.
Well, I'm not sure that George W. Bush could define democracy. If you look at the statements that he's made, they're so inconsistent with democracy. Just like I don't think he could define working for a living. I mean, this is a guy who was born on third base and thought he hit a triple.
Well, under his watch, that's what's transpiring. But anyway, I'd like to go on to something else, if I may. I got a question and a question with a comment, if we got time.
Go for it. Well, we got about two
during
minutes.
During the Nuremberg trials, when they were held accountable, the Nazis, what did they do to the media that was complicit in subverting truth and information for the purpose of war profiteering and concealing crimes?
You mean the Nazi media?
Yeah, the German media.
Yes.
What did they do to them for what they perpetrated in their complicit alliance with the Nazis.
Well, I know there were a few people who were prosecuted, and they certainly wanted to
get durables.
Did
they hang some of them and take their wealth away?
You know, frankly, I don't remember. It's been at least 15 years since I read Scheer's Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. I'm sorry.
Because we all know that these things can't be perpetrated without the complicity of the media. And I'd like to go on to something else, if I may.
Sure. You got another half a minute here.
You talk about Newt Gingrich. Here's a guy that was boffing his girlfriend when he was lining up the impeachment against Clinton.
Yeah.
This is a guy that said during the telecommunications bill that free markets and opening it up will lower the cable rates. Well, my cable rate and the majority of the people in this country's cable rates have never been higher. He ends up with $1.5 million house. He gets a book deal with Rupert Murdoch, the guy that he really worked for, and all his books are bought. But when you go to garage sale, you never see any Gingrich's or Newt Gingrich's books at garage sales.
It's the whole wholesale hustle. I mean, you know, they do the same thing with Ann Coulter and O'Reilly's books and all this. It's playing games with the system. Good point, Armin. I'm going to see if we can get Newt on the show while I'm in New York next week. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A survey released August 23rd reveals most United States Border Patrol agents and customs inspectors do not believe they have the tools to fight terrorism. The American Federation of Government Employees reported that although 91% of workers surveyed said stopping terrorists from entering the country is a very important aspect of their job, 64% say they haven't been given the tools, training, and support needed to do that job. Charles Scholater, president of the National Homeland Security Council, said that the concerns of the survey have been brought to the Homeland Security Department, but often it seems the department is more concerned with the appearance of employees and not their ability to do an efficient job.
The emphasis should be on supporting the employees, making sure that they have all of the equipment, tools, and training they need to do the job the right way.
It's day three of a five-day strike by healthcare workers throughout Washington State. 1,700 nurses and medical technicians are seeing their healthcare threatened by their employer, Group Health Cooperative. SEIU District 1199 Northwest called the strike in response to company demands that employees' premium costs increase by 12%. Chris Barton is a 30-year veteran nurse and secretary treasurer of the local.
The amount of money that is being spent on the whole effort of trying to maintain patient care during a strike is phenomenal. So it's pretty clear to us that this is not just an economic issue also for the employer. This is one in which they want to change the whole dynamic of how people pay for health care here. They see this as a strategic move to be able to handle their health care costs at the same time just passing that burden on to the workers.
Barton says that in the past, nurses accepted lower pay for better benefits and believes her union is not only standing up for itself, but drawing the line in the sand for all employees whose health care is being threatened.
Workers at the Southern Minnesota Beet Sugar Cooperative, who had been locked out of their jobs for 3 weeks, will return to work today after voting to approve a new 3-year contract yesterday. The 220 workers at the Renville Cooperative showed up for work 3 weeks ago to find the doors locked. It wasn't until a mediator stepped in that the two sides were able to sit down and hammer out a new contract. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Businesses may still be reluctant to open up positions for full-time help, but students are having an easier time finding jobs this summer. That's the finding of a new report released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Between April and July, the number of employed 16 to 24-year-olds grew by 2.3 million, better than last year's increase of 2.1 million. The new hires raised the number of working youth to 21.4 million. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, I've heard that other countries are down on the U.S., a land of mass consumption, our lives filled with excess. But my daddy wasn't fighting on Normandy that day for the right to drive a Hyundai. I refuse to live that way.
And welcome back. Just consider the song here.
And I'm proud to be an American who gets just 5 mpg. Though I live alone, the car I own can seat 103. And I'll gladly park so close to you when you pull out you can't see. No, I'll never trade my Escalade. God bless my SUV.
And welcome back. It's just a perfect piece of bumper music there. I let it run a little long. The reason why is because our next guest is an old friend and a brilliant man, an absolutely brilliant man. Dennis Weaver won an Emmy Award for his role in television's longest-running series, Gunsmoke, over the past 5 decades. He's been on stage, television, motion picture. He founded the organization LIFE, Love is Feeding Everyone, and the Institute of Economics. And Dennis Weaver, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, thank you very much, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's always great to talk with you, Dennis. Let's talk about, you know, this little bumper music here about the SUVs and
I love that. I love that.
Wasn't that a hoot? I think Jim Turr did that. I think that came from BlueCanyonProductions.com. I may be wrong, but in any case, there's a lot of good stuff like that out there. But you have really taken the bull by the horns, an old metaphor. But anyway, you've really taken this thing on. You invented a word, Econonomics. And you've started this institute, and now you've created this website, DennisWeaverNow.com, to try and get folks involved in it. Tell us, what is Econonomics?
Well, Econonomics, of course, it's pretty obvious. It's a combination of ecology and economics. It's a word that I coined. It really represents the truth, Tom, that our ecology and our economy are absolutely interdependent. They're two sides of the same coin, if you want to put it that way. And for us to have a sustainable future, we need both of those to be sustainable. We need a sustainable environment, which supports, is necessary for human life, of course. And we also need a sustainable economy, which is essential for human welfare also. So we need both of those. And we have the way and the means to do that. We have the technology available. We have the technology that's on the horizon that can create new jobs. You know, The Economist magazine said something very profound. It said the environment may turn out to be the greatest opportunity for invention and enterprise that the industrial world has ever seen.
Yeah.
In other words, by saving the planet, by creating technologies that give us good jobs but do not destroy the place that we live, we can have a much better future.
You know, I've noticed, Dennis Weaver, DennisWeaverNow.com, the website there that you've created for this, I've noticed that many of our politicians talk about, and well, not just politicians, activists, right across the board, people talk about economic growth and the benefits of it as if that's a singular value, and then other people talk about sustainability as if that's a singular value. But I frankly can't remember a politician specifically speaking, I mean, even you know, the progressive folks like, you know, Ralph Nader, talking about the need to marry sustainability with an economic system that works. And that's what you're doing. Are you getting any traction? Are you finding politicians and people with the power to actually change policy who are realizing this epiphany that you had?
Well, you know, I've talked to a number of politicians, maybe not at the highest level that I should or would hope to talk to, but when you explain Econonomics, when you explain that it's a win-win situation, when you explain that it is necessary for us to save our environment and at the same time create jobs and create a stronger economy in doing it, there's very little argument against it. It's just a common sense philosophy, really. And I would just hope that more and more politicians could hear this message. That would be my hope.
Yeah, and that'll be driven, I think, from the bottom up, from people hearing the message on programs like
that's
this and
right.
talking about it.
That's right. And the bottom up is the way to do it. I mean, it'll never happen from the top down because they're entrenched in so many habits and ways of doing things that we've done in the past that they, and they're so influenced by special interests that it'll never happen from the top down. It has to happen from the bottom up.
Yeah. Now, you talk about Ecolonomics as a word, as a movement, as an academic discipline, as a vision, and as a commitment. The academic discipline I find fascinating. Are you finding that colleges, universities, high schools, whatever, are interested in teaching this as a specific discipline?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we have a program at the Missouri Southern State University in Joplin that is going to be an example, or that is an example that other colleges can pick up on and other high schools, because we've got to get to the young people and educate them and give them hope and a certain promise for the future, rather than so many of them are filled with despair and cynicism and apathy right now. And there's no reason for that. Well, there may be a reason, but there's also a big reason to know that we can do things in a better way, that we can create a better world for everybody. And we're teaching that at the Missouri Southern State University. We have a certificate program that is available now there. Well, actually, they've boosted it up to a minor, and it's on its way to a major that people can receive a major in Ecolonomics. And it's just, we got to get to the young minds while they're still open, while they're not hardened by prejudices that they pick up along life's path. You know, the older we get, the more we're more reticent to look at new ideas and new thoughts and new ways of doing things. You know, it was Albert Einstein that said we can't solve today's problems with the same thinking that created them, the
yeah.
same consciousness.
Yeah.
So that's we've got to, while those young minds they're like sponges. If a young person sees an idea or hears an idea that makes sense to them, they say, okay, I'll go with that. So that's what we've got to do before they get just totally hardened with the old ways of doing things and just say, and, well, that's the way it is, and we're not changing anything.
Yeah. And that's what you're doing, is changing these minds and waking people up. And you're doing a great job of this with the Institute of Ecolonomics. DennisWeaverNow.com is the website for it. And tell us about Angel's Nest in Taos, one of your pet projects.
Well, it's another example of how we can create jobs and live in harmony with nature. And Angel's Nest is the first Ecolonomic health and rejuvenation yoga center, and we're using yoga as the means to create the economy, create jobs. And,
yeah, but it could just as easily be a factory making electric pumps, couldn't it? I mean, I said it could just as easily be a factory making electric pumps or, the Ford.
Yeah, it could be, exactly.
Yeah.
We're just using yoga. But the exciting thing down there is this whole complex will be sustainable in an environmental way. We're creating one of the first hydrogen fueling stations down there. We're converting certain automobiles to hydrogen, and actually also to biodiesel, and a mixture of the two. And we're capturing our water because we have designed our buildings in such a way that we can do that. And water is going to be right now a very important issue around the world, because we're not only using it up faster than nature can store it for us, but we're polluting it at the same time.
Yeah.
So we're showing people that there is a way of designing things that will help us to have a sustainable life, a sustainable world, and one that is also, when I say sustainable, I'm talking about environment and economy both. Right now, we do not have a sustainable economy simply because the energy that we're using to support that economy is not sustainable. And, of course, I'm talking about fossil fuel, primarily oil.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, is one of the major things that we've got to change, and that's what we're teaching, is that there are alternative fuel sources and advanced technologies that right now, if we use them, could free us from our dependence on foreign oil, which is causing so much havoc in the world.
Yeah, yeah, and not to mention, a war in the Middle East and all this sort of stuff. We're talking with Dennis Weaver, the actor, activist, author of his autobiography, All the World's a Stage, and founder of the Institute of Economics. DennisWeaverNow.com will get you information, get you on the newsletter for that and the information on that. Dennis Weaver, just before we finish here, you and I have known each other for a couple of decades. You helped out with a Community for Abused Kids that Louise and I started 25 years ago, and for which I'm still very grateful. You helped with a fundraiser, several fundraisers on that. And about 7 years ago, I was working on a book called Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, and I just had reached a point where I had so much information about how the world was going to hell in a handbasket, and I was just feeling totally bummed out. And I called you up one day and said, how do you keep so optimistic? And you just gave me some wonderful advice. I wonder if you could just share with our listeners, because I get calls like this all the time from people saying, it just seems like, whether it's people saying, George Bush is willing to lie, or, big corporations are taking over, whatever, pick your, people are just in despair. So many people feeling powerless and in despair. And what's your response to that?
Well, I don't know what I said to you, actually, but it's pretty obvious to me that you can fall into the trap of being feeling despair and feeling cynicism and that sort of thing. But if you look around the world today, you can also see another force, and it's an incredible force. I think, in my mind, I'm well aware that there's a great wave of human energy that's totally unstoppable, that has seen what we've done to damage this earth and the place that we live, and are absolutely determined to correct that,
yeah,
to make this place what it can be. And you just got to take one day at a time, and you got to also get support from those that agree with you, so that there's strength in numbers. And that's what we're doing with the Institute of Economics also. I've got so many young people so eager to be part of this great movement, this great shift in the collective consciousness of the world. I got so many of them really active at the Missouri Southern State University, for instance. It's so hopeful. It really is a very hopeful sign to me. I know the world, most people say, God, we're going to hell in a handbasket, but there's a huge force that wants to do the right thing,
yeah,
to make it a sustainable future for the kids and generations to come. And that's the force that's going to win.
Yep, and if each one of us just pushes our wagon, we'll get across this frontier, right?
Absolutely.
There you go. Okay.
You know, that shift in the collective consciousness of the world, as you are suggesting, that's an individual responsibility. We got to take care of ourselves, like how we treat each other, what is our connection with our families, how do we treat the guy that fixes our car, or the lady that does whatever she might be doing, whether it's working in a restaurant, serving you, or whatever. We just got to know that there's a connection between us and act as though that is a reality, because it is.
Yeah.
We are all connected in this world, and we've got to stop thinking of ourselves as being divided, because that's the consciousness we're in now, a consciousness of separation and division.
Yeah.
And we're moving towards a consciousness of oneness, a consciousness of understanding and kindness and love and peace.
We're all on this spaceship Earth together here,
Absolutely.
No matter how we divide it up. Dennis Weaver, thank you so much for being with us. Once again, the website, DennisWeaverNow.com, for information on the Institute of Economics and the great work that you're doing. Thank you, Dennis,
Tom.
For everything you're doing in the world. Good talking with you. Bye now. It's 13 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894. Our number. Somebody called and wanted to let us know that the SUV song is actually by the Capitol Steps. So my apologies to the Capitol Steps for wrongly attributing it, and my thanks to them for their brilliant work. Let's take a call. Jim at Atlanta's on the line. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, Tom.
You are live and on the air, Jim.
Oh, really? Well, yes, I'm listening to you on XM Radio.
Okay.
I'm riding back from the beach in my friend's car, and he has
actually,
XM.
My guess is it's probably Sirius Radio, but
Sirius, yes, it is Sirius.
Okay, well, turn it down and turn it down. And listen to the phone because there's a 5 second delay there. So,
okay, I've turned the radio down.
Okay, so what's up?
Hey, I'm a Bush supporter. I'm going to be up front with you here, but
that's fine.
I'm listening to a lot of the Swift Boat veteran controversy and. And I just had a question for you, and if you give me an honest answer, I'll just let you answer it, and I'll get off the phone. One thing, you know, I've read some of the accounts. I have not read the book. I've read some of the chapters on the Swift Boat from the Swift Boat veterans. And you know, I'm not a rabid Bush supporter, and I'm pretty open minded. I like to think. And the one thing that kind of scares me is how the Kerry campaign, you know, and for real, if Kerry wins this election, you know, I'll be one of the type of Americans who will, you know, do my best to support him in everything he does. I'm a proud American, and I'm, you know, if he becomes a commander in chief and the president, I'll support him. But one thing that kind of scares me about the whole situation is the fact that his campaign has tried to silence this group. You know, like what they say or not, you know, we freedom of speech is something that we should all hold dear and fight for.
Yeah, Jim, I got to I agree with you. I don't think that John Kerry should be going to court on this thing, even though it is against the law under the new Feingold-McCain Act for a campaign to coordinate itself with a 527. And it looks like the Bush campaign has done that.
It can't be proven that Bush.
I agree with you. And I don't think he should be going to court. I think this should be played out in the court of public opinion. Jim, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 10 minutes before the hour.
This is Vivionik Rastian. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Protesters are demanding we bring our troops home from Iraq immediately, but we can't do that. You see, the Iraqis are very hospitable, and the new leader we selected for them has asked our troops to stay. If we brought them home now, we would risk insulting our hosts. And then who would be there to keep an eye on things while we extract our oil from below their soil? And there have been complaints about American mercenaries torturing Iraqi prisoners, but who are you going to trust to soften them up so they can lead us to all those missing weapons of mass destruction? The government? Or a private security firm that can do the dirty work more efficiently for less money with less accountability? Privatization. It works. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, Call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
There's no simple explanation for the problems that afflict amphibians. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. For more than 10 years, scientists around the world have been studying a dramatic decline in the number of frogs and other amphibians. They say the main problem is that we're destroying the places where these creatures live, but they say there's also a lot more to the story. Andrew Blaustein is a biologist at Oregon State University. He says one apparent cause of the declines is harmful ultraviolet radiation from the sun. We're protected from UV radiation by ozone in the upper atmosphere, but the ozone layer has been damaged by synthetic chemicals, and Blaustein says that might be hurting all kinds of amphibians.
When UV hits any living organism, it can cause cell death or a mutation. And if you cause cell death or mutation to a great degree, the entire organism can die, could become deformed and eventually die, or it can be damaged in some other way.
Blaustein says UV radiation can affect amphibians at all stages of life. It can kill them as embryos, it can make them vulnerable to disease after they hatch, and it can even blind them as adults. Researchers say a lot of other problems plague amphibians, including disease and pesticides. Blaustein says it's important to investigate all these factors, especially how they might work together.
I think contaminants play some role. I think UV radiation plays a role. And we've recently shown in the last couple of years there's an interaction between these things, that if there's increasing UV or if there's more contamination, then these animals' immune systems are a little bit hampered and they get diseases more easily. So they're all interrelated.
Blaustein says we need to know why amphibians are declining. He says whatever is happening to them could happen to a lot of other living organisms. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
The moon is pulling at me. The moon is pulling at you.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Klana in Wisconsin, is on the line. Hey, Klana, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just heard you talking about the Feingold bill of 527.
Right.
I guess that's, according to the newspaper yesterday, Feingold said that the bill dealt only with, McCain-Feingold bill dealt only with the political party soft money and phony issue ads
Runs
within 60 days of the general election, not with the so-called 527 groups.
Okay, so I may well have been wrong on that. I know that, at least my understanding is, that the Kerry campaign has filed a complaint with the Federal Election Commission, and which I have no problem with, broadly speaking, because it looks like there's been some wrongdoing. For example, down in Florida, there was, you know, the Republican campaign and the Swift Votes Veterans coordinating events together, which apparently is against the law. Mm-hmm. But my point is that I think strategically it's a blunder, because it looks like, oh, he's the whiny liberal, he's going to court to defend himself. And the reality is that this thing isn't going to be decided before the election. It'll be decided sometime next year when nobody cares. And
right.
And instead, I think what he should have been doing is what he did today and what I opened this show with, where he's got Max Cleland, who left three limbs on the battlefield in Vietnam, and Jim Rassman, the guy whose life John Kerry saved, going to Crawford, Texas to knock on Bush's door and say, Mr. Bush, would you please stop these liars? And, you know, that kind of strategy is what I think is a very wise strategy. I think, frankly, at this point in time, for them to try and use the legal process, I mean, let a third party do that. Let somebody, you know, a common cause or common public citizen or, you know, one of the groups, the extraordinary groups that Ralph Nader started, you know, file a complaint with the Federal Election Commission, if that's possible. But I don't think that the FEC is the venue in which they should be trying to stop these ads, because then what happens is the Republicans just spin it as, oh, they're trying to censor us.
Mm-hmm.
It may be absolutely right that what the Republicans are doing is wrong and illegal, and yet they're going to lose, the Democrats are going to lose the PR war. And I'm frankly, you know, really interested in seeing George Bush not be president after November 2nd. So,
and me too.
Yeah. Therefore, that's why I said, you know, when Jim calls in and he says, you know, he's repeating the right wing spin, right, which is, oh, they're going to court to try and stifle this. Well, it's not actually quite true, but so many people believe it because of this. And so that's why I said, you know, I agree. I don't think that they should be doing that. I think that they need to be taking this head on, calling these guys liars, pointing out the lies, and, you know, exposing Bush and his hypocrisy for exactly what it is. Klana, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. We got to move along here. The end of the hour. Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. One step, one vote, one person at a time.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second in each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A survey released August 23rd reveals most United States Border Patrol agents and customs inspectors do not believe they have the tools to fight terrorism. The American Federation of Government Employees reported that although 91% of workers surveyed said stopping terrorists from entering the country is a very important aspect of their job, 64% say they haven't been given the tools, training, and support needed to do that job. Charles Scholotter, president of the National Homeland Security Council, said that the concerns of the survey have been brought to the Homeland Security Department, but often it seems the department is more concerned with the appearance of employees and not their ability to do an efficient job.
The emphasis should be on supporting the employees, making sure that they have all of the equipment, tools, and training they need to do the job the right way.
It's day three of a five-day strike by healthcare workers throughout Washington state. 1,700 nurses and medical technicians are seeing their healthcare threatened by their employer, Group Health Cooperative. SEIU District 1199 Northwest called the strike in response to company demands that employees' premium costs increase by 12%. Chris Barton is a 30-year veteran nurse and secretary treasurer of the local.
The amount of money that is being spent on the whole effort of trying to maintain patient care during a strike is phenomenal. So it's pretty clear to us that this is not just an economic issue also for the employer. This is one in which they want to change the whole dynamic of how people pay for health care here. They see this as a strategic move to be able to handle their health care costs at the same time just passing that burden on to the workers.
Barton says that in the past, nurses accepted lower pay for better benefits and believes her union is not only standing up for itself, but drawing the line in the sand for all employees whose health care is being threatened.
Workers at the Southern Minnesota Beet Sugar Cooperative, who had been locked out of their jobs for 3 weeks, will return to work today after voting to approve a new 3-year contract yesterday. The 220 workers at the Renville Cooperative showed up for work 3 weeks ago to find the doors locked. It wasn't until a mediator stepped in that the two sides were able to sit down and hammer out a new contract. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Businesses may still be reluctant to open up positions for full-time help, but students are having an easier time finding jobs this summer. That's the finding of a new report released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Between April and July, the number of employed 16 to 24-year-olds grew by 2.3 million, better than last year's increase of 2.1 million. The new hires raised the number of working youth to 21.4 million. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I've been a lifelong Republican since I was old enough to vote, and I thought that Bush would be a fiscally conservative individual. I feel betrayed. I don't believe that a government should be engaging in reckless spending, recklessly stretching the military to the point of breaking, recklessly trying to stretch, alter, and amend the Constitution, which this country was based on. And that's why I'm going to vote for John Kerry.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
It's time for another Gooberhead Award. Presented periodically to those in the news who had their tongues going 100 miles per hour, but who forgot to put their brains in gear. Today's goober goes to Washington lobbyist Frank Keating. He's the former right-wing governor of Oklahoma who tried to get a top political job in the Bush regime, but ethical problems disqualified him. So Frank sank to a lower ethical strata, hiring on to hustle legislative favors for life insurance corporations. Appallingly, Frank recently stood up for several insurance firms that are engaged in a shabby insider deal to fleece young American soldiers who are on their way to war in Iraq. Often posing as military instructors in personal finance, insurance agents from these corporations have duped unwitting young troops into buying rip-off life insurance policies that are unneeded and nearly worthless. It's an abominable, totally unethical act of war profiteering. But here came Keating, the industry mouthpiece, to blame the victims. Someone who is mature enough to fight and quite possibly die for their country should be freely able to decide how much and what kind of life insurance they should have, he said. What a goober. He knows that this is not about free markets or free will. These low-ranking soldiers are set up for the insurance predators. The sales pitch often comes as part of compulsory military classes. The soldiers are not even told they're buying insurance, and many of the insurance agents are retired military officers. These 18, 19, 20-year-old soldiers, conditioned to obeying the commands of senior officers, believe that retired Colonel so-and-so is telling them something they must do. So they sign without questioning. This is Jim Hightower saying, yet Keating is still lobbying Congress to let his corporate clients continue picking the pockets of the underpaid grunts heading to Iraq. Is this the freedom they're being asked to die for? I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George V.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 7 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Conservative economics rolling right along. The Reaganomics, Bushonomics, voodoo economics, trickle-on economics, take your choice, supply-side economics. CEOs at companies that outsource the most U.S. jobs. Notes a new report from United for a Fair Economy and the Institute for Policy Studies. CEOs of companies that outsource the most U.S. jobs are rewarded with bigger paychecks. According to a new report titled Executive Excess 2004, Campaign Contributions, Outsourcing, Unexpensed stock Options, and Rising CEO Pay. Average CEO compensation at the 50 firms outsourcing the most service jobs increased by 46% in 2003. It just makes sense, you know. CEO fires you, who he was paying, you know, $8, $10, $12, $15, $20, $25, whatever, an hour, and sends that job over to India or wherever, where he can get it done for a buck an hour or two or three at the most. And there's a lot of money left over. So the CEO says, hey, how about jacking up my paycheck? In fact, here's how it worked. Average CEO compensation at the 50 firms outsourcing the most service jobs increased by 46% in 2003. Can you imagine a 46% pay increase in 1 year? Compared to a 9% average increase for all CEOs at the 365 large companies surveyed by Business Week, top outsourcers earned an average of $10.4 million in 2003, 28% more than the average CEO compensation of $8.1 million. From 2001 to 2003, the top 50 outsourcing CEOs earned $2.2 billion while sending an estimated 200,000 jobs overseas. Now, it's not just, you know, the simple math of that. See, the reality is, and I keep making this point on this program, and I think it's a really important one for us for people to get, to know, to understand. And that is that CEOs who are outsourcing jobs, just like big box retailers who come into communities and devastate local economies and wipe out small entrepreneurs, just like large industries that gobble up competitors and behave in monopolistic fashions and destroy things like local news and media, these things are not, it's not because you've got a bunch of evil people running corporate America. Now, I'll be the first to acknowledge that there are a few. But I think, by and large, the vast majority of them are simply people who are saying, okay, I'll play the game by the rules, and the rules allow me to do this. Now, you know, among them, there's a bunch who are saying, well, let's change the rules to make it even easier to outsource jobs. You know, let's set the rules up so that we don't have to worry, you know, about things like tariffs and that might protect domestic industries or local jobs. And but you know, really, the problem is not the CEOs. The problem is the rules. And the rules are made via the political process, which means that if we want to see this thing changed, you and I have to get involved. Now, on the other hand, on the other side, the CEOs who say, hey, you know, if I can get somebody to do this job for $2 an hour rather than $10 an hour, I can pay myself more money. They figured that out. Political contributions also appear to pay off, notes United for a Fair Economy. CEOs of the 70 companies that sponsored this summer's Democratic and Republican national conventions saw their pay jump 49% in 2003. Wow. Can you imagine a 49% pay increase in 1 year? Similarly, the 38 CEOs who have personally raised at least $100,000 for either the Bush or Kerry presidential campaigns earned an average of $15.1 million in 2003, 86% more than the average large company CEO. After 2 years of narrowing, the CEO-to-worker wage gap is rising again. Now, this is just domestically. The CEO pay-to-worker pay ratio reached 301-1 in 2003, up from 282-1 in 2002. You know, back when I was a kid, it was like 50-1. In many institutions, the civil service programs, the military, many universities, you have a maximum of 20-1. But if the minimum wage had increased as quickly as CEO pay has just since 1990, just in the last 14 years, the minimum wage today would be $15.76 an hour. Which, frankly, I think is pretty reasonable. I mean, that really is a reasonable bottom threshold for work. If you're going to play by the rules, if you're going to play the game, if you're going to show up and put in your time, you're going to help America, you know, produce the products that need to be produced, let's pay people well. Let's pay them an appropriate amount. One rationale for high CEO pay, notes United for a Fair Economy, one of the reasons these CEOs give, I need to have an $8 or $10 million a year paycheck, they say, because it's such a risky job. You know, being a CEO, it's like a lot of risk, responsibility. Yet the average CEO makes 56 times more than a U.S. Army general with 20 years experience, who would make $144,000 a year. And the average CEO makes 634 times more than the pay for our soldiers in Iraq, a starting pay in the U.S. Military, $12,776 a year. 634 times more. So, it's tough work, but they're not getting shot at. I'm sorry, I have no sympathy. Bank of America, for example. This again from this news release from United for a Fair Economy. Bank of America, for example, cut nearly 5,000 U.S. jobs while outsourcing up to 1,100 jobs to India last year. In July of 2004, that's just last month, the firm announced that it planned to cut another 12,500 U.S. jobs in the next 2 years. So, what happens to the CEO for this act of treachery to American workers? Well, as I said, actually, here I am doing it. It's not treachery to American workers. It's playing the game by the rules. The act of treachery was the Republican Congress that passed these rules. I shouldn't even say Republicans, because there are Democrats who are all for this too. It's the conservative mindset that has tried to roll back the New Deal and roll back the protections on labor and small business that were put into place in the United States in the 1930s as a result of the excesses of business in the era from 1880 to the 1920s that led to the Great Depression, and that may well lead to another one if we keep up with the voodoo economics. Anyhow, what happened to Kenneth Lewis, the CEO of Bank of America, after cutting 5,000 U.S. jobs and sending 1,100 to India last year, and this year announcing another 12,500 U.S. jobs are going to be toast? Well, last year he got $37.9 million, 110% increase over the year before. And by coincidence, the Political Action Committee of Bank of America has made $576,319 in contributions in the 2003-2004 election cycle. You know, what's perhaps most disheartening about all this is how cheap our politicians are. I mean, corporate welfare in the United States, human welfare in the United States is more or less in the neighborhood of around $40 billion, $41 billion. Corporate welfare in the United States, around $150 billion. And to get that $150 billion, these guys are only spending a few million, maybe a few hundred million at the most. But it's got to be. Politicians have got to be the best investment around, which is why we should make it illegal to invest in politicians. It used to be in 1907, Teddy Roosevelt got this passed through Congress, that it was a felony for a corporation to give money to politicians. We really need to go back to this. The outsourcing of service jobs to low-wage countries, United for a Fair Economy further notes, has further widened the pay gap between workers and their bosses. Currently, the pay gap between U.S. CEOs and American call center workers is about 400 to 1. But the gap between U.S. CEOs and their Indian call center workers is 3,348 to 1. Boy, that will have a little impact on the bottom line, which will help executive salaries rather dramatically. speaking of CEOs, Dick Cheney's company. Well, here, let me just, right from the very beginning, this is an article by Pratip Chatterjee, published on Alternet, The Thief of Baghdad. Starts out, missing. One giant generator owned by the United States military, estimated cost $734,863. Here's a generator worth $750,000, last seen somewhere in Iraq. Where is this thing? He notes a team of auditors was dispatched to Iraq in late January after a string of internal reports showing that the military was wasting billions of dollars of taxpayer money. I mean, this is, when you think about what we could do. I mean, so far this war in Iraq has cost us $129,336,664,800. The meter is running here. As I'm saying, it just went up to 673,676,000. Anyhow, that amount of money, if you want to, you know, say, okay, what could we do with that amount of money? That's enough to send 18,285,000 children through a year of Head Start, of preschool. It's enough to provide health insurance for 55,437,000 American children. That's more than all uninsured Americans combined. Just what we've spent in Iraq. Of course, we are, you realize, providing free health care to the citizens of Iraq with that money. It's written right into their constitution. It's one of their rights. Interesting, eh? The $129,336,756,000 that we've spent so far in Iraq as of this moment could have been used to hire for one full year at prevailing pay rates. How many public school teachers? Speaking of America's competitiveness in the world, 2,463,557 public school teachers. You get that? 2.5 million teachers in the United States could have been hired with the money we've spent so far in Iraq. We could have paid for full four-year scholarships at public universities, at state universities, for 3,280,579 students with the money just that we have spent so far on Iraq. Which brings us back to this $750,000 generator that the military lost. Well, turns out Halliburton somehow has it. They're still scratching their heads on that, along with a few billion dollars of other missing money. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. With the continuing erosion of the middle class and the separation between the rich and poor increasing at an alarming rate as America's middle class vanishes, I refuse to lie down and watch our great democracy be replaced by a corporate aristocracy. That's why I wrote What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. In this new book, I present a striking call to action and outline what hardworking citizens can do to win back the power we're supposed to command under the United States Constitution. Now, more than ever, we citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president and the author of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson. If we are to continue to be the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles and, almost more important, we must be led by someone who understands and believes in the people, not the powerful with deep pockets. My new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, is available in bookstores everywhere.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guaranty Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
These have been tough times for most Americans. The economy has been in the toilet, and there's all this scary terrorism going on. But ordinary people have risen to the challenge and tightened their belts and paid more of the tax burden, while unions get busted and jobs outsourced and benefits cut. All so we billionaires could enjoy more wealth than ever before. Now, you're not going to hear it from Bill Gates or Kenneth Lay, but I want to take a moment to thank you all for your generosity and grace, for everything you've done just for us. And now I'm off to squander my obscenely large tax refund on another vacation home and my third yacht. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And freedom is beautiful. And, you know, it'll take time to restore chaos. So strong
and I don't mean, baby. And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. What could we have done with that money? The money that we've spent so far in Iraq, $129,337,000,000, we could have bought and paid for 1,847,677 additional housing units for low-income housing, essentially eliminating the problem of homelessness in the United States. We could have fed with $129,337,000,000, the amount of money we've spent so far in the war in Iraq, we could have fed all the hungry people in the world. We could have fully funded global anti-hunger efforts for 5 full years. We could have fully funded the worldwide AIDS program with that $129 billion for 12 years. And we could have provided immunization, basic immunization, to every child on planet Earth with this $129,337,000,000 for 43 years. Are you starting to feel a little concerned about how our money is being used? I think it's, frankly, criminal. Criminal. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Dave in Humboldt County. Our ever erstwhile Dave. Hey, what's up, Dave?
Oh, Tom, you're probably going to be more knowledgeable of what I'm attempting to share with you than I, and if so, just let me know and I'll listen. But from overnight with Ray Taliaferro, I became aware that apparently CNN had a very good day yesterday. They were behaving like as though they were broadcasting in a country with freedom of speech and freedom of the press. The Swift Boat folks for truth, apparently, O'Brien, one of his main things was that John Kerry could not have been in Cambodia with his Swift boat on the date and time, he said, and that it was not possible to get there. And that he brought out tapes from Nixon,
Yeah, with John O'Neill saying to Richard Nixon, yeah, I was there. I was in Cambodia.
Yeah, okay, that's yeah. one. And they're also
so it turns out that John O'Neill, the co-author of the book, is a bald-faced liar.
So. Yes, and they're confronting him as that.
Yeah.
And on several other points around that, you probably are knowledgeable, and you're probably going to get into it. One of the other things is they are laying the abuses in the Iraqi prisons on right at the feet of Rumsfeld, who is running from them like crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Another thought I had there listening to you, you know, both yourself and Weaver, there is a desired presumption that even the corporate interests have some level of humanism or humanity among them. I'm getting the impression that the neocons, a big part of their payoff is that they are able to drive their Lincoln through the slums and flaunt their wealth among the poorest. And as wealthy as they get, they tell me that the richest man in the United States operates on the same economy, or a little more so, than the entire continent of Africa. So extreme wealth, it's never going to be satisfied. You're still looking for more at the expense of the poorest. But anyway, I hope you get into more of what CNN apparently had a lot to say yesterday. They made these people out to be total liars.
Yeah, yeah, it's and I saw pieces of it. Dave, thanks for the call, and thanks for bringing that up. I am going to get into some of these things. In fact, I got a stack of stuff here about it. I figured probably we'll get into it in a third hour of our program here, because there's a few other things that I wanted to talk about first. That I think, you know, it's the Swift boat issue. Is, you know, as I predicted a couple of weeks ago, they did it too soon. They did it too soon. Bush's strategy when he slimed Ann Richards back when he was running for governor, when he slimed John McCain in the South Carolina primaries, his strategy was you get a third party to go in and tell slimy half-truths and lies and raise questions about the integrity of your opponent. And all the while, you're standing on the sideline going, oh, I think my opponent is an honorable person. And there's no time to respond in the last couple of times he's done this. And the same thing with his father, with Willie Horton. It's too late to respond. Well, this was early enough. The response is coming, and it's going to fall apart and blow up in these guys' faces. 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A survey released August 23rd reveals most United States Border Patrol agents and customs inspectors do not believe they have the tools to fight terrorism. The American Federation of Government Employees reported that although 91% of workers surveyed said stopping terrorists from entering the country is a very important aspect of their job, 64% say they haven't been given the tools, training, and support needed to do that job. Charles Scholader, president of the National Homeland Security Council, said that the concerns of the survey have been brought to the Homeland Security Department, but often it seems the department is more concerned with the appearance of employees and not their ability to do an efficient job.
The emphasis should be on supporting the employees, making sure that they have all of the equipment, tools, and training they need to do the job the right way.
It's day three of a 5-day strike by healthcare workers throughout Washington state. 1,700 nurses and medical technicians are seeing their healthcare threatened by their employer, Group Health Cooperative. SEIU District 1199 Northwest called the strike in response to company demands that employees' premium costs increase by 12%. Chris Barton is a 30-year veteran nurse and secretary treasurer of the local.
The amount of money that is being spent on the whole effort of trying to maintain patient care during a strike is phenomenal. So it's pretty clear to us that this is not just an economic issue also for the employer. This is one in which they want to change the whole dynamic of how people pay for health care here. They see this as a strategic move to be able to handle their health care costs at the same time just passing that burden on to the workers.
Barton says that in the past, nurses accepted lower pay for better benefits and believes her union is not only standing up for itself, but drawing the line in the sand for all employees whose health care is being threatened.
Workers at the Southern Minnesota Beet Sugar Cooperative, who had been locked out of their jobs for 3 weeks, will return to work today after voting to approve a new 3-year contract yesterday. The 220 workers at the Renville Cooperative showed up for work 3 weeks ago to find the doors locked. It wasn't until a mediator stepped in that the two sides were able to sit down and hammer out a new contract. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Businesses may still be reluctant to open up positions for full-time help, but students are having an easier time finding jobs this summer. That's the finding of a new report released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Between April and July, the number of employed 16 to 24-year-olds grew by 2.3 million, better than last year's increase of 2.1 million. The new hires raised the number of working youth to 21.4 million. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
A shining blue. Scarlet fleece changes hue.
Oh, that's a flash to the past.
Sinks from view. Where
you're not like good old Donovan. Actually, a few years ago, heard him play live. You know, like 30 years after. The guy is still brilliant. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 27 minutes before the hour. Missing one giant generator owned by the United States military. Embarrassed military authorities did eventually track down the missing generator, and much of the money, we're talking billions, $1.9 billion in Iraqi oil revenue, both of which seem to have ended up with none other than Halliburton. But the Pentagon was not able to explain just how Halliburton gained possession of Iraqi funds, when neither the United States Congress nor the Iraqi government authorized their transfer to Halliburton in the first place. Worse yet, the man who authorized the allocation, CPA Chief Paul Bremer, had already quietly left Iraq just as the reports were being released. Strangest things. Alan Ratner's on the line. Time for our report from the Talk Radio News Service. Our Alan Ratner in Washington, D.C. Hey, Alan, what's happening in Washington?
Well, there's actually quite a bit. I mean, one is the Cheney comment about his daughter, which has two speculations going in the town. One is that this is their way of showing that the Republicans have a nice big tent.
Oh, yeah.
And that the Republicans are, tolerant of different views within their, within who they are and what they are.
Yeah, it's election time. They're going to slap compassionate back
on
conservatives.
Well, the other theory, which are done by the conspiratorial people, are that this is signaling a real drift between Cheney and Bush, and that they're going to put in John McCain. Now, that's a far-flung one, but I've heard it stated.
Yeah, well, a year and a half ago, I predicted that the October surprise would be that Cheney would have heart trouble at the last minute, and they would put in Rudy Giuliani or John McCain.
Well, the second one there is what everybody's talking about.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons that McCain has been sucking up to George Bush recently is that he knows that if he wants to be president, his only chance is to be vice president on this ticket, which would really give John Kerry a run for his money. And if they win, then of course he would be president in 2008, or he would have a very
exactly good, that would be the leg up. Yeah. No question about that. Then of course the other controversy that's firing around is the fact that Ginsburg, who is the Bush Cheney campaign lawyer and also advised the 527, the Swift Boat Group, resigned today, and he resigned as counsel. People are saying, well, why isn't Mr. Sandler resigning or Robert Bauer resigning, a Sandler who works for the DNC? And the Republicans are calling foul about that one.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
but there's a difference between advising a 527 and advising a 527 that is doing what the Swift Boat guys do.
Yeah.
Now, the Republicans are also saying that behind the scenes that this is putting credibility questions in Kerry, just like they were able to do for Gore. That's how they're seeing it. That's how they're playing it. I don't necessarily agree with that. But, you know, they always have to be careful because it could do exactly what happened when they went after Clinton and the sex stuff, and it just boomeranged back, and people said enough is enough.
Yeah, well, that's the point I was making just before the break at the bottom of the hour was that, Bush has a long history. In fact, his entire political history, 100% of it, is having surrogates at the last minute slime his opponents with half-truth innuendo or just outright lies, while he stands on the sideline going, I can't believe they're saying those. I don't endorse those by any means. My opponent is a noble person. Ann Richards is a wonderful person. You know, blah de blah. And but this time, and his father, in fact, did the same thing. You know, under Lee Atwater's suggestion with Dukakis. But this time, it happened early enough that there's time for a response, which is what happened with Clinton and the sex stuff. And I think this may well backfire, blow up in their
face. Right, because they timed it so there's still 3 months left in the campaign.
Yeah.
Some of the Bush people are saying, well, he's hemorrhaging Kerry. He can't recover. They have to remember the Kerry history is that he has recovered every election at the last minute.
Yeah. Yeah, it's we live in interesting times, Ellen.
We certainly do. Also, Kerry today, through his campaigns, asked that Rumsfeld resign, and he said, again, used his failing to win peace, failing to make sure our troops receive proper training, et cetera, that Rumsfeld did not demonstrate the leadership necessary, required from the department.
That is great. This administration is so vulnerable on so many issues. They have failed so many things that they and Kerry has been playing defense, and he should be playing offense. I mean, when you go after the incumbent, you attack their record, and thank God he's finally doing it. That's great to hear. Perhaps you can illuminate me here. I had some callers in the last hour talking about this. There has been a complaint filed with the Federal Election Commission by the Kerry campaign about the Swift Boat ads. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Tell
me about
that's this. Correct. That was actually done about 2 days ago. Now, remember, the FEC is half Democrats, half Republicans, so it's a guarantee that nothing ever gets done.
Right.
They have no independence on the FEC.
And they have no
power.
None
of the individual parties are represented, so...
Yeah,
other than the Democrats and Republicans. So, there's gentlemen agreements, winks and nods, and nothing ever gets done.
Yeah, and essentially the FEC has no teeth either. And the Republicans and the great right-wing talk machine out there in talk radio is spinning this that, Kerry is whining to the courts with his trial lawyers. When, of course, it's not a court and it's not lawyers, but nonetheless, that's how it's been. In fact, we had a conservative caller to the show saying essentially that. And I was saying, I think that it was a strategic mistake for them to do this. It's not going to produce any positive outcome, and it's handing ammunition to the right. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree. I mean, I don't see that this is going to get. They're just not going to get a lot of traction.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple other things. There's a second report that will be coming out today, just as we speak, actually, on the prison situation. So we expect more of that. This is a series of reports. Of course, the last one will come somewhat after the election.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder why.
Yeah.
Not surprising at all on this situation.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to learn a lot more about the complicity of the administration, but it won't happen until after the election.
Yeah, if George Bush loses this election, John Kerry is almost going to have to give him amnesty as he comes into office, or we're going to spend years just uncovering all the crimes of this administration and prosecuting people. I mean, it's just... which actually might be a good thing. It might be a national catharsis, but it's just incredible.
One other last. There was another 9/11 hearing this morning. And it was the House Aviation Subcommittee, and they just talked about the aviation, the 9/11 report on the Aviation Committee as pretty thin gruel, they described it as. And they also said that we spend more on all kinds of intelligence than every other country in the world combined.
And what do we have to show for it?
Zip.
Yeah. Well, isn't the problem really, and this is the thing that the media, the mainstream media doesn't seem to get at all, and I'm sure that you guys were on top of it, but, you know, we've only been using your service here for a few weeks, but that it really wasn't so much a failure of intelligence. It was an effort on the part of the administration to cook the books. I mean, the creation by Douglas Feith under Rumsfeld of this Office of Special Plans within the Pentagon, which controls 80% of the intelligence budget, to take raw intelligence and put their own spin on it without professionals.
And most people don't realize that that's where the intelligence dollar is spent, not in the CIA.
Right. Yeah. So that's the real problem. So Kerry is calling for Rumsfeld's resignation. That's great. That is great. Ellen, anything else in Washington that we need to know about?
Well, I think that touches on the main tops of the hit parade today.
Okay, great. Thanks for the call and the report.
I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Appreciate it. Okay, talk to you tomorrow. Have a great one. It's Ellen Ratner from the Talk Radio News Service reporting in our daily 1:30 Eastern Time report, wherever you may happen to be at this moment, this time of day, every time we get this report. So here we have now Halliburton not only unable to explain how they ended up with $1.9 million in Iraqi oil revenue, but also unable to explain how they ended up with this $750,000 generator, among other things. Unable to explain why they're charging $100 each to do a bag of laundry for the United States military. So this whole con idea of, oh, we need to privatize things because private corporations are more efficient. Well, private corporations are more efficient at producing profits. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're more efficient at doing anything else. It really and truly doesn't. I mean, you know, and we're seeing the reality of this. And here we allocated $18.4 billion for reconstruction of Iraq. And that's money that was supposed to be going largely to private firms. And Paul Bremer was supposed to be passing it out to rebuild the country of Iraq. And the two priorities were the water system and the sanitation system. I'm sorry, the water system and sanitation system and the healthcare system. You know how much money has been spent on this so far? Out of this $18.4 billion? Nothing. Nothing. But, nonetheless, Halliburton, as Pratap Chatterjee notes in his article, The Thief of Baghdad, published on Alternet today, Halliburton has been the biggest beneficiary of the Coalition Provisional Authority and Pentagon's liberal spending policy. See, this is to defame the word liberal. The company alone got $3.9 billion last year to repair oil fields and provide food, laundry, sanitation, and transportation services to the military. Where did the money go? Well, paying $100 for a bag of laundry, abandoning $85,000 trucks for lack of a spare tire. Meanwhile, other companies, like Science Applications International Corporation of San Diego, were shipping armored Humvees for company executives on specially chartered jets and paying themselves $200 an hour to run a U.S. propaganda TV station that no one was watching. So the Pentagon does an audit. They say, you know, internally, well, let's do an audit internally here and figure out what the heck is going on. And their internal audit discovered that Halliburton was unable to account for $1.8 billion missing dollars. The military says, what happened to this money? Halliburton says, we don't have adequate staff to keep track of this. And the Defense Department says, oh, well, that's a good enough answer. We'd like you to answer it. We'd like you to give us a little more information fairly quickly. Well, you know, it's going to take some time. We got this tiger team of internal auditors, right? Tiger team. Of internal auditors. Halliburton housed the Tiger Team at the five-star Kempinski Hotel in Kuwait, paying each of them a whopping $10,000 per month for their troubles. At the time, U.S. soldiers were required to live in tents at a cost of $1.39 a day. The military came along and audaciously, how dare they, suggested that Halliburton employees move into the tents. They said, are you kidding? We want to stay in this five-star hotel. $10,000 a month, that ain't nothing. We got billions of your dollars. And Dick Cheney is still, every year, getting compensation from Halliburton, and nobody thinks this is a scandal. 1-866-889-8894. Actually, there's a lot of us who think this is a scandal. It's just that it's never going to get anywhere in Congress. No investigation of any sort. Billy in Santa Cruz, California on the line. Hey, Billy, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Should you and I act surprised by the Halliburton news, or should we just say, told you so?
Yeah. I don't think any of us are surprised. It's just important to keep pointing it out.
It'd be a good ad. I mean, to literally run a little, you know, some of the Cheney-Bush, the Cheney connection to Halliburton, and then just, you know, and those numbers, you know, so far stolen $1.2 billion of your dollars they can't find, and then just, we told you so.
Well, it'll probably make its way into the billionaires for Bush ads, you know.
So here's, exactly, and that's what I want to talk about. Today's segment, further tales from the kleptocracy.
Okay.
And this is about, again, who are the Republicans? Let's talk about their character. So we have these 507s, what are they called?
527s, the 527 groups that are unregulated on, you know, yes,
exactly.
527s.
Yeah. Here, the amazing thing is, I mean, really, this really tells about character. The Republicans give completely to the party and to Bush.
Right.
And, like, they've given about $5 million to this thing. Democrats have given $135 million to these things. That's why Bush wants them closed. But let's talk about why it's so different.
But, see, wait a second, Billy. Things are changing. There have been two new 537s that have just been created. I'm looking for the story. I've got it in my stack here, stuff to get into today.
Okay, but I'm going to talk about yesterday backwards, okay?
Okay.
And here's my analysis, see if you agree. The reason why all the money goes to the party and to the thin, not to the 527s, is because when a Republican gives money, he wants something for his money. He wants his name next to the dollar figure. You don't get that with the 527s the way you do with money direct. These guys only sell, you know, their money for, you know, for favoritism, don't they?
Well, yes and no. I think that we can equally criticize in times past when Democrats have been in power, the same thing has been going on. I mean, what you're describing to some extent is human nature. But here, in today's Wall Street Journal article, Republican by Jeannie Cummins, Republicans tap rich donors to form groups targeting Kerry. Let me just share a couple of paragraphs on this with you. A political group recently formed by backers of President Bush has amassed a treasure chest of $35 million, that's so far, right, and plans a barrage of commercials criticizing Democratic challenger John Kerry, even though the president this week denounced such outside organizations for running negative campaigns. It's called the Progress for America Voter Fund. It was formed in May. New Republican groups, deep pockets, matching those to some of the Democratic groups, you know, blah de blah de blah. And when we come back from the break, I'll tell you who the owner is. Billy, thanks for raising the question. I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. Always good to hear from you. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Engineers and fishermen are working together to protect whales off the coast of New England. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Whales in coastal areas sometimes get entangled in commercial fishing lines. These lines connect buoys on the ocean surface to traps for lobsters or crabs on the ocean floor. The entanglements can injure whales and, in rare cases, drown them. An engineer at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology has created a new type of buoy to avoid these problems. Clifford Gowdy is an engineer with the MIT Sea Grant program. He says when a whale swims into a fishing line, the line can settle into the crook between the whale's body and a fin or a fluke. As the whale moves forward, the line might slide along without getting caught. The problems can start if the line pulls down a buoy and the whale runs into it.
Now, it's at that point that it either turns into an insignificant experience for the whale or turns into an entanglement. If the buoy gets caught on the appendage of the whale and the whale detects that, oops, I'm in contact with something, one can assume that there might be some thrashing involved to try to get disentangled. The whale might be successful, or the whale might get further entangled in the line.
If the whale gets further entangled, it could be injured or even die. Gowdy has created a buoy that will slip by the whale as easily as the fishing line itself. He got help with the design and testing from several fishermen in Maine and Massachusetts. The result is a device that has a flexible, tapered stem on the bottom. It's designed to make a smooth connection with the line so it will slip right by a whale and let it swim away. Gowdy says tests have shown that it's easy to use and it's effective. He hopes fishing regulators will give it official approval soon so people can start using it. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back. Here we are from the Wall Street Journal today. Jeannie Cummings article, Republicans tap rich donors to form groups targeting Kerry. Backers of Progress for America. This is a group that has already raised $35 million, another 527. They haven't spent any of it yet. Keep in mind, the Swift vote guys have spent less than $2 million. These folks have raised $35 million, which they have yet to spend.
Backers of Progress for America are Alex G. Spanos, owner of the San Diego Chargers football team, and Dawn Arnell, wife of the chairman of AmeriQuest Capital Corp., a mortgage financing company, each of whom has donated $5 million in personal funds. There you go. Billy, there's your quid pro quo, perhaps. Both rank among the top, the president's top donors, that have been granted what the campaign calls ranger status by raising at least $200,000 for Bush's reelection. Besides Progress for America, notes the Wall Street Journal, another conservative group backed by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is expected to make its voice heard this fall. They're going to be coming out of the woodwork. I'm telling you, there is going to be an absolute explosion of these things. And George Bush going, I don't think this, I don't like any of these, but we're going to let them do their dirty work. 1-866-889-8894. Chuck in New Mexico on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
You know, you made a comment about half an hour ago about Kerry might have to pardon Bush just to sort of let the nation get on with its business.
Like Jerry Ford did with Nixon, yeah.
Well, you know, I didn't like that when Jerry Ford. I mean, they were the liberal talk radio shows were calling Nixon's residence San Clemency, California. And my attitude is okay. We'll do an amnesty. We'll cut a deal with you guys. You give back all the money you stole from the American people, and we'll let you go.
Yeah, I'm speaking facetiously, Chuck.
Oh, okay. I thought you were, because you're such a historian. I thought you were serious.
No, I would not. I would not. Absolutely not support amnesty for George Bush and his cronies for the crimes that they have committed. I think that they need to be held accountable for them.
Okay, good. I feel better. Thanks.
Yeah, no, it was. I was hoping to provoke a response from Ellen when I said that, and she did not take the bait.
But I did.
Okay. Yeah, you did. Well, that's fine. You know, I mean, that's talk radio, right? You toss it.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, right. Tom.
Okay, thanks a lot, Chuck. I appreciate the call, and thanks for helping me set that record straight, because that's something that we shouldn't leave dangling out there too long. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Tom Hartman here with you, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison instead of some right-wing think tank.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available at bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A survey released August 23rd reveals most United States Border Patrol agents and customs inspectors do not believe they have the tools to fight terrorism. The American Federation of Government Employees reported that although 91% of workers surveyed said stopping terrorists from entering the country is a very important aspect of their job, 64% say they haven't been given the tools, training, and support needed to do that job. Charles Scholater, president of the National Homeland Security Council, said that the concerns of the survey have been brought to the Homeland Security Department, but often it seems the department is more concerned with the appearance of employees and not their ability to do an efficient job.
The emphasis should be on supporting the employees, making sure that they have all of the equipment, tools, and training they need to do the job the right way.
It's day three of a five-day strike by healthcare workers throughout Washington state. 1,700 nurses and medical technicians are seeing their healthcare threatened by their employer, Group Health Cooperative. SEIU District 1199 Northwest called the strike in response to company demands that employees' premium costs increase by 12%. Chris Barton is a 30-year veteran nurse and secretary treasurer of the local.
The amount of money that is being spent on the whole effort of trying to maintain patient care during a strike is phenomenal. So it's pretty clear to us that this is not just an economic issue also for the employer. This is one in which they want to change the whole dynamic of how people pay for health care here. They see this as a strategic move to be able to handle their health care costs at the same time just passing that burden on to the workers.
Barton says that in the past, nurses accepted lower pay for better benefits and believes her union is not only standing up for itself, but drawing the line in the sand for all employees whose health care is being threatened.
Workers at the Southern Minnesota Beet Sugar Cooperative, who had been locked out of their jobs for 3 weeks, will return to work today after voting to approve a new 3-year contract yesterday. The 220 workers at the Renville Cooperative showed up for work 3 weeks ago to find the doors locked. It wasn't until a mediator stepped in that the two sides were able to sit down and hammer out a new contract. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Businesses may still be reluctant to open up positions for full-time help, but students are having an easier time finding jobs this summer. That's the finding of a new report released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Between April and July, the number of employed 16 to 24-year-olds grew by 2.3 million, better than last year's increase of 2.1 million. The new hires raised the number of working youth to 21.4 million. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I've been a lifelong Republican since I was old enough to vote, and I thought that Bush would be a fiscally conservative individual. I feel betrayed. I don't believe that a government should be engaging in reckless spending, recklessly stretching the military to the point of breaking, recklessly trying to stretch, alter, and amend the Constitution, which this country was based on. And that's why I'm going to vote for John Kerry.
Move On PAC is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Wonderful news, folks. The latest economic miracle has been found. Can you say nanotechnology? Better than high tech, we're told. Even better than biotech. Nanotech is the golden fleece, the next big thing. It involves lab technicians manipulating microscopic molecules to manufacture synthetic nanoparticles that can be used in computers, lubricants, and other products. These man-made substances are all the rage in economic development circles, with both federal and state governments pushing taxpayer money at this fledgling industry. Politicos in my state of Texas, for example, are all a-Twitter about getting a big piece of the nano action, planning to throw scarce public funds at corporations in order to lure them to choose Texas as a nano center. But if they choose us, what do we get? A boom, they promise. But remember the 90s, when they promised that high-tech would make everyone rich? Those companies were not profitable, however. The boom went bust, and the best high-tech jobs are now being sent offshore. So here we go again. Capital is madly rushing to nanotech, but the companies are not profitable, and no one is actually promising good jobs for Americans. Then there's a little hiccup that neither the politicos nor the industry want to talk about. These tiny nanoparticles are big-time toxic. A stunning new study of fish finds that the synthetic molecules cause severe brain and liver damage in the largemouth bass that were tested, and they wipe out whole populations of small organisms in water that are a crucial part of the aquatic food chain. Other studies have found that nanoparticles cause lung damage when inhaled, raising serious health issues for workers in nanotech factories. This is Jim Hightower saying, this time, before our leaders sink tons of our tax dollars in yet another high-tech, get-rich-quick scam, shouldn't they ask a few pertinent questions about the price we'll pay for this so-called progress?
I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George V.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, don't worry, be happy. Just everything is fine. The official message of the Bush administration's White House Council on Environmental Quality. Speaking to people working at Ground Zero, you know, where the trade towers fell, and all that asbestos from the construction of the World Trade Center went into the air, and mercury and superfine particles of concrete and whatnot. All these heavy metals, and you've never heard of the White House Council on Environmental Quality? Well, it's really a rather significant organization. It's headed up, actually, and this is sort of, I'll give you the rest of the story before the story, as you know, to paraphrase Paul Harvey. It's headed up by James Conanton. He's chairman of the Council on Environmental Quality. Now, who is this guy? Well, he's an industry lawyer who represented major asbestos and toxic polluters before his appointment by President Bush. Excuse me, I had to cough there. Just the thought of it is burning my lungs. The Sierra Club just released a thorough and detailed report. And the Republicans going into New York City next week, where a lot of New Yorkers can't get out of their wheelchairs because they were down at Ground Zero and they were told, don't worry, be happy, everything is fine. Hundreds of people sick, many of them debilitated because of the government's failure, as the Center for American Progress notes in the progress report today, because of the government's failure to alert the public to obvious health risks, including toxic smoke, asbestos, and mercury at Ground Zero. The EPA essentially whitewashed this thing. The day after the World Trade Center collapsed, this from the report, quote, a top federal scientist warned in a strongly worded memo against the quick reoccupation of buildings in lower Manhattan because of possible dangers from asbestos and other toxic materials. Okay, so you've got one of the top federal scientists, saying, you know, we really shouldn't be telling people to go back to work down there in lower Manhattan. Not for, you know, at least for a few days. Let's figure out what the dangers are. Let's clean this place up. There's going to be asbestos in these places. It's going to be getting into the air system. You know, let's just take a day or two, make sure things are safe. The first press release from the EPA on September 13th not only ignored what their own top scientists said, but instead said the results of air samples were, quote, very reassuring, end quote. On September 17th, federal and city officials allowed thousands of people to return to lower Manhattan, declaring a day later that, quote, their air is safe to breathe and their water is safe, end quote.
although the Inspector General of the Environmental Protection Agency later admitted, quote, the EPA had not gathered nearly enough data to make such a sweeping declaration, end quote. And that was the time, according to this new study, when people were filling up their lungs with asbestos, lead, concrete, powdered glass, and other debris, including toxic vapors that were burning their tissues. Meanwhile, on October 3rd, here we are now, a little more than three weeks later, the EPA said ground zero data through September 30th revealed, quote, no significant health risks. Now, the administration's explanation is that they really didn't know about the risks. Keep in mind, the White House Council on Environmental Quality, run by an industry lawyer who represented major asbestos and toxic polluters before he was appointed by President Bush. Yeah, I mean, do you really think that this guy who represented the toxic and asbestos industry is going to say, you know, be careful, asbestos is bad for you, when he's made a career out of saying, well, it can't be that bad, or whatever he has said. I don't mean to put words in his mouth. Who knows exactly what he said? But consider the mindset of anybody who would work as an attorney for the asbestos industry and for toxic polluters. Throughout the cleanup effort, rescue and recovery workers were given, again, quoting from this new study, inadequate safety gear, conflicting messages about the need to use it. When union health officials urged employers to provide safety gear, they encountered resistance, and privately hired dust and debris cleanup workers often had no protective gear whatsoever. So what does the EPA do? They play language games. As the Center for American Progress notes, when EPA officials did find hazards at Ground Zero, Inspector Tinsley's August report documents several instances where the Bush administration stripped their draft statements of caveats and warnings. This is like, you know, above the EPA, the administration saying, no, you can't tell people that, before releasing them to the public. For instance, language in an EPA draft stating asbestos levels in some areas were 3 times higher than national standards. Right? I mean, the EPA scientists, they go out, they do the science. They say, you know, there's 3 times more asbestos in the air than is legal. I mean, really, if you want to talk about safety, in my opinion, there's no such thing as a safe level of asbestos. But there's always some asbestos in the air. A lot of it just comes from car breaks, for example. You live on a hill, you're going to have asbestos in the air. You live in a big city, you know, New York. I mean, they're always slamming on the brakes, right? Asbestos. So they've got this standard, and here it is, 3 times the standard. That's what the draft report says. Well, by the time the administration's done with it, it's been to change to, quote, slightly above the 1% trigger for defining asbestos material, end quote. Can you make sense out of that gibberish? Neither could anybody else. In another example, quote, a warning on the importance of safe handling of Ground Zero cleanup due to lead and asbestos exposure was changed to say that, quote, the general public should be very reassured by initial sampling, end quote. As for the September 18th statement telling New Yorkers their air and water were safe, agency scientists quoted in Inspector Tinsley's report said, quote, the EPA added reassuring language and deleted words of caution, end quote, after it was urged to do so by the White House Council on Environmental Quality. Yes, that same group run by the guy who was the lawyer for the asbestos industry. How low can you go? 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to call in. Our website, tomhartmann.com. Click live chat. You can drop into our chat room. Full of folks, interesting conversations always. Some of the finest, most intelligent, most articulate, most insightful, and occasionally wackiest folks on the internet. You guys will cut me a little slack for that, won't you? Let's go to the phones. 1-866-889-8894. Billy in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Billy, what's up?
Hey, John. I was wondering if you've, I'm sure you probably have, heard about this video called In Plain Sight.
I've heard about it. I have not seen it.
No, I haven't either. I would like to see it, but it certainly sounds like it's got some incredible footage on there.
Yeah, this you're talking about the 9/11 one. Maybe I'm thinking the one that's essentially the video version of the book that Dave from Humboldt County is always talking about. What is it called? Worse than Pearl Harbor or something? Yeah, I think the new Pearl Harbor. Basically suggesting that there's a serious conspiracy afoot with regard to 9/11, or at something between massive incompetence and serious conspiracy. Is that
right? Yeah. There's evidently video that this is regular news footage that was slowed down, and I guess it was maybe shown once right near the time of the incident, and then just never. Put under wraps, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, Billy, next year there's going to be a book out about the Kennedy assassination that is going to be an absolute blockbuster. And here it is, what, 41 years later? And I suspect 41 years from now, people are still going to be having this conversation. You know, what happened on 9/11? How did it happen? How did these guys blow it? What did Bush know? What about the Bush family's links to bin Laden? What about that over $1 billion in Saudi money that has been transferred over the years to groups associated with the Bush family? And perhaps even going all the way back, perhaps people will still be talking about the fact that Prescott Bush in the 1940s, George's grandfather, lost his bank, the Union Bank, because Roosevelt shut it down because he was doing business with Hitler.
Right. Well, as long as you brought it up, I saw the William Cooper tape, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Regarding the Kennedy thing.
Yeah, I actually, when I was down in Atlanta about 15 years ago, attended a speech that Bill Cooper gave. This was before he died. And, some of it was pretty solid stuff and some of it was a little over the top. So.
Right, he could be considered an 80-20, but when you look at the tape, it's obvious what happened.
Yeah. I just find the whole phenomenon fascinating. And frankly, I prefer, just for purposes of being able to speak to everybody. There are many of us who suspect that there's much more here than meets the eye. Pun the video, but even if we were to totally discount all the conspiracy theories, all the anything like that, the connections between the bin Laden family and the Bush family, the fact that George Sr., former President Bush, that on 9/11 that morning was in a meeting with a member of the bin Laden family, and the Carlyle Group's connections, even if we just set aside all that and said it's all innocent, you still have this very awkward reality that no one's disputing. That when the Bush administration came into office, the Clinton administration, Sandy Berger in particular, went out of their way to tell Condi Rice and others, and Bill Clinton went out of his way to tell George W. Bush and others, your biggest threat is bin Laden. You've got to do something about him. We've tried to kill him three times and have failed. He's a danger. George W. gets this thing on August 6th that in Crawford that says bin Laden determined to strike in the U.S., and he then goes on the longest vacation in the history of the presidency, scared to death to go back to Washington, D.C., which he doesn't do until after 9/11. And it's just it's a damning sequence of events. It's just, these guys, they weren't just asleep at the switch. They were avoiding the switch. The question then, of course, is why? I don't have the answer to that, but it's a terrible thing. Billy, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, John.
Thanks for calling and raising the issue. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service.
Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. With the continuing erosion of the middle class and the separation between the rich and poor increasing at an alarming rate as America's middle class vanishes, I refuse to lie down and watch our great democracy be replaced by a corporate aristocracy. That's why I wrote What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. In this new book, I present a striking call to action and outline what hardworking citizens can do to win back the power we're supposed to command under the United States Constitution. Now, more than ever, we citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president and the author of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson. If we are to continue to be the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles and, almost more important, we must be led by someone who understands and believes in the people, not the powerful with deep pockets. My new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, is available in bookstores everywhere. For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 20% of Iraq veterans who were in at least five firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. The strategic oil reserves are back in the news. Let me share that with you right after. Let's take a call here right after this. Sean in Indianapolis, Indiana on the line. Hey, Sean, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, I wanted to clear up something about that in plain sight, the video.
Sure.
He doesn't bring up any conspiracies. The only thing he does, and he's very careful to distinguish it, is he brings up facts. He doesn't try and interpret them, but he brings up facts.
That's great. Have you seen it, Sean?
I'm sorry, what?
Have
yeah.
You've seen it? How can a person see it? How can a person find this video?
Well, you can go to Implant site. It's implantsite.com, and it's only $15.
Uh huh.
Or you can go to coasttocoastam.com.
Uh huh.
And they were on. The guy was on the 18th. And I listened to the whole show twice.
Yeah, so there's an archive of the show. That's interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, they're just plain facts. You know, no conspiracy theories, nothing. Just really bizarre things, you know, that are just facts. And what they need and putting it all together.
Yeah. Well, I will get our producer on this. We should get the whoever's behind this movie on the program and discuss it. It sounds like a good one.
The one thing that I want to bring up that I haven't heard anybody but this guy bring up is the plane that took off and flew into the South Tower. When it took off, it didn't show like a little bulge in the bottom of the front of the plane, but on the CNN and Fox DVD that they put out after the 9/11 crash clearly shows being a bulge behind the bulkhead of the jet that flew into the South Tower.
Yeah, I've seen those pictures. And
that just happens to be the plane that disappeared from the radar for 38 minutes. And there was a Fox reporter that saw the plane that said that it didn't have any windows. And it was not an American Airlines plane.
So what happened to the American Airlines plane then, Sean?
Well, we don't know what happened to the plane, but there was a 767 that matched the exact same description that the Fox guys saw that Boeing put out by the Air Force.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, there were just normal people on that airplane who are no longer accounted for. Do you really think
yeah,
that they...
Tom,
are they all living in Malaysia now?
I mean, you know, another thing he brings up is that we haven't seen any video of the plane flying into the Pentagon, and there's cameras all over the Pentagon. And we haven't seen any plane wreckage from the Pentagon either.
Yeah, and they point out that the hole is smaller than the airplane would have been, and I've seen that, and
absolutely.
You know, there
was a hotel here in Indianapolis that I think it was 1988. A plane that was the hotel was right next to the airport. A plane flew right into the hotel.
Yeah,
and you can see the burn marks from the wings.
Yeah,
yeah,
like the old cartoons, you know, where Wile E. Coyote goes through a wall, you know, you see
exactly.
The outline, right? Yeah.
You didn't see that on the Pentagon.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that may have been, though, the Pentagon is made out of just like really, 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 really heavy reinforced concrete, brick, stone, whatever, you know, and so only the fuselage made it through and the wings collapsed. Yeah. I mean, who knows? I just don't know. I'm going to go looking for this thing. We'll try and get this guy on the air. It sounds fascinating. But as I said, even without all these weirdnesses, I think that there's enough to indict this administration for having on their watch allowed this disaster to happen and throw the bums out of office therefore. 29 minutes past the hour. Sean, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, helping you win the water cooler war. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A survey released August 23rd reveals most United States Border Patrol agents and customs inspectors do not believe they have the tools to fight terrorism. The American Federation of Government Employees reported that although 91% of workers surveyed said stopping terrorists from entering the country is a very important aspect of their job, 64% say they haven't been given the tools, training, and support needed to do that job. Charles Scholader, president of the National Homeland Security Council, said that the concerns of the survey have been brought to the Homeland Security Department, but often it seems the department is more concerned with the appearance of employees and not their ability to do an efficient job.
The emphasis should be on supporting the employees, making sure that they have all of the equipment, tools, and training they need to do the job the right way.
It's day three of a five-day strike by healthcare workers throughout Washington state. 1,700 nurses and medical technicians are seeing their healthcare threatened by their employer, Group Health Cooperative. SEIU District 1199 Northwest called the strike in response to company demands that employees' premium costs increase by 12%. Chris Barton is a 30-year veteran nurse and secretary treasurer of the local.
The amount of money that is being spent on the whole effort of trying to maintain patient care during a strike is phenomenal. So it's pretty clear to us that this is not just an economic issue also for the employer. This is one in which they want to change the whole dynamic of how people pay for health care here. They see this as a strategic move to be able to handle their health care costs at the same time just passing that burden on to the workers.
Barton says that in the past, nurses accepted lower pay for better benefits and believes her union is not only standing up for itself, but drawing the line in the sand for all employees whose health care is being threatened.
Workers at the Southern Minnesota Beet Sugar Cooperative, who had been locked out of their jobs for 3 weeks, will return to work today after voting to approve a new 3-year contract yesterday. The 220 workers at the Renville Cooperative showed up for work 3 weeks ago to find the doors locked. It wasn't until a mediator stepped in that the two sides were able to sit down and hammer out a new contract. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Businesses may still be reluctant to open up positions for full-time help, but students are having an easier time finding jobs this summer. That's the finding of a new report released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Between April and July, the number of employed 16 to 24-year-olds grew by 2.3 million, better than last year's increase of 2.1 million. The new hires raised the number of working youth to 21.4 million. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you'd like to be on the program, Charlie in New York. Where in New York, Charlie?
Yeah, New York.
Manhattan. Oh, New York City, Manhattan. Wonderful. Hey, what's up?
Excuse me? I can't hardly hear you.
Oh, okay. What's up?
Yeah. Well, I just called because I came in, you know, I turned on when you were just talking about the situation at the Ground Zero?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and I was working at Ground Zero.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that was 2002.
Did anybody tell you about the dangers?
Yeah, well, you know, they did a sort of like presentation meeting with the workers there.
Uh-huh.
All right, but that was basically, in my opinion, that was basically just for show.
Yeah.
Okay, because, you know, when we went back to work, you know, there was present dangers as far as gas and everything, and it was basically ignored.
Yeah. And this, and then the EPA covering it up, and then they got the guy who's in charge of all this stuff, who is actually a lawyer for the asbestos industry. You know, Bush always appointing his industry cronies to take care of the public good. What's been the result for you, Charlie?
Okay, well, since that time I've worked there in early 2002, I've had a cough, flimsy cough ever since. I told my union officials, they tell me something about go to for some testing at Mount Sinai Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
All right, testing. I'm going to have to look into this medically.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think, Charlie, that the folks in New York City who experienced, lived through 9/11 and who, like yourself, the heroes who helped, clean that up, dig people out, try and do what they could to save or salvage, what could be done, that they're going to be a presence when the Republicans come to town, that there's going to be any kind of speaking out or protesting against the lies that this administration told New Yorkers about what was going on?
Okay. First of all, Tom, you have to speak up because...
I'm sorry, Charlie.
I only caught the last part.
Yeah, do you think that I'll really crank it up here? And okay. Do you think that there's going to be any sort of a presence when the Republicans come to New York City next week by people like yourself whose lives were on the line down there in lower Manhattan after 9/11, protesting the lies and misrepresentations and distortions and the rewriting of the reports and things by the EPA and whatnot by this administration?
Well, I say this, I haven't heard anything yet, okay, particularly from my union. It hasn't been any announcement of, making a public thing about it.
Yeah.
Anything like that.
Yeah, that's a shame. Because they picked New York City for the symbolism of 9/11. And that symbolism really cuts both ways, because it's not only, a terrible thing that happened to America, and George Bush got to play cheerleader there as, he was, of course, his only extracurricular activity at Andover Prep School was that he was the head of the cheerleading team. And so, he got to do that on top of that pile of rubble, somebody's going to hear from us. But on the other hand, they also, failed to inform in some cases and outright lied in other cases to people like yourself who were there doing that work about the dangers of that area. And somebody should hold them to account for that.
Okay, and what you said that was reported about the respiratory procedures as far as equipment and all that.
Right.
It really wasn't taken really that seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, they gave you some stuff, right?
Yeah.
But danger zones that you're not supposed to, it was, like I said, it was basically for show.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tragedy. Charlie, thanks for the call, and thanks for letting us know about that. I appreciate it. I appreciate your weighing in, and I wish you well. I hope that you do get some medical, assistance there. Check that thing out, and that you get better. And thank you for your service to the United States.
Well, I thank you for bringing up the subject. At least somebody did.
Yeah, well, I'll continue to. I'll continue to. Thanks, Charlie. Do good. Keep the faith there in New York City. 1-866-889-8894. Sheila in Denver, Colorado on the line. Hey, Sheila, what's up?
I just wanted to add 2 cents. I heard a news report on our local news here the other day. They said that there were 14 dogs that were used in the recovery efforts at the World Trade Center, and that of those 14 dogs, 9 of them are dead.
Right. Yeah, I had that story in my stack for yesterday and never got to it. And on the one hand, there are folks who are claiming that, well, we don't know that those dogs died as a result of, having inhaled things down at Ground Zero. And on the other hand, apparently the people who are handling the dogs are saying, come on, give me a break. We know that these dogs were exposed to toxins, and now they're not around anymore.
Yeah, too bad. That's all I had.
Okay. Sheila, thanks. Thanks for calling and bringing that up, pointing that out. Louise just handed me this story. This from the Philadelphia newspaper, phillyburbs.com. Not sure exactly which newspaper has that website. One of the Pennsylvania newspapers by Jennifer West. This is that backlash that we were talking about in the last hour when Ellen Ratner from the Talk Radio News Service called in. And in fact, in the first hour of the program, I raised the issue that George W. Bush's political history, his entire political history, not to mention his father's as well, has been characterized by a sliming attacks done by third parties at the last minute, going after Ann Richards, for example, when she was governor of Texas. Ann Richards had hired a couple of people on her staff who were a gay man and a lesbian woman. And she was actually proud of that. You know, I mean, they were out. They were open about their being gay, and Ann Richards thought, you know, this is a fine thing. We have an inclusive administration here. And at the last minute, a third-party group comes along and starts suggesting that Ann Richards wants to turn the state of Texas into a theme park for gays from all over the world, sort of thing. And George Bush standing on the side, going, "Oh, I would never say I don't condone that." You know, some pretty incredible damage was done with these overblown, hyper hysterical, charges. Which led to George Bush beating Ann Richards in a race where everybody had pretty much assumed that Ann Richards was going to win the gubernatorial race there in Texas. And then, of course, John McCain, the same thing. George Bush behind in the polls, South Carolina. And, at the last minute, slime attacks on John McCain. And George Herbert Walker Bush, Willie Horton and other attacks against Michael Dukakis. And they're doing it again now, you know, these Swift Boat ads, even though they're largely discredited now. Yesterday, CNN coming out with the audio tape of Richard Nixon and John O'Neill talking to, you know, the co-author of the Swift Boat book, right? The two authors. One of them is a guy who hates Jews, hates Arabs, hates gays, and goes on and on, a bigot of the first order by his own words. And he didn't call himself that, but looking at his words, he certainly demonstrates that. And then you got O'Neill now caught on tape talking to Richard Nixon. O'Neill saying, "Oh, it's not possible John Kerry could have been in Cambodia because you just couldn't go there because there were these big cement things in the river, blah, de, blah, de, blah." And then, you know, you've got O'Neill saying to Richard Nixon, "Well, I went up to Cambodia for you." All right. Among other, the lies are now being exposed because they made a strategic blunder. If they were going to slime John Kerry with this stuff, they should have done it a week before the election when there wasn't time to respond. But now there's time to respond. And in fact, Vietnam War veterans, and not just Vietnam War veterans, veterans from all different sorts of, from the Korean War, from World War II, from the Gulf War, the Kosovo, and veterans who never engaged in combat but who served honorably in the United States military are just coming out of the woodwork to support John Kerry. And the reason why is because they feel that these attacks, which essentially are claiming that the military, that you can write your own service record and the military will hand out medals like Cracker Jack toys, are impugning the valor of everyone who served. This story by Jennifer West and PhillyBurbs.com. War veterans from across Pennsylvania rallied Tuesday. This day before yesterday. Today's Wednesday. Rallied Tuesday in support, rather than accusation, for Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry. In light of recent anti-Kerry advertisements that have dominated the news, a group of veterans, 13 of them specifically, gathered at the Philadelphia International Airport to greet Kerry before he attended a fundraising reception in the city. More than 1,000 veterans across the state have mobilized in support of Kerry, but most of those were prevented from attending Tuesday night's airport arrival because of security restrictions. Now, they could attend the gigs he came to, but only a certain number of people can actually walk up to the airplane, right? They're not going to have 1,000 people standing there at the airplane. So with hugs and pats on the back, Kerry took time to chat with each veteran, each of these 13 guys, before heading to the Franklin Institute for Kerry Edwards Victory Fund reception. Among those gathered at the airport was Bucks County Vietnam vet Bill Perry. For Perry, who was the first to greet Kerry off the plane, it was a poignant moment in the Kerry campaign. This is what Bill Perry said. He said, "This Swift Boat controversy has an effect on all vets, not just John Kerry. So does this mean that when the American public sees any GI with medals, they're going to question if he earned them? When they attack Kerry, they're attacking veterans all across the United States. This guy's the treasurer of the Disabled American Veterans in Levittown, Pennsylvania." John Soltz, who's the state coordinator for Pennsylvania Veterans for Kerry, said he needs our support more now than ever. And goes on to, Jim Campion. Excuse me, another guy, coordinator of Bucks County Veterans for Kerry, says, "This whole Swift Boat argument seems a bit silly. It's moronic, really. They don't just hand out medals like party favors. They're just trying to nitpick his record, and it's ridiculous. It's well, I would say it's more than ridiculous. It's characteristic of the way the Bush family campaigns, and it's tragic for American democracy. And because here we are, we have real issues facing America, real issues. The destruction of the middle class, the environment, war, issues of war and peace, Kim Jong-il building nuclear weapons in North Korea while we just sit on our hands. In fact, we're saying, okay, guy, we're going to negotiate with you. We're going to be really tough with you. We're going to pull 30,000 troops out, or I think it's 12,000 troops out of our 35,000 troops in South Korea. we're tough negotiators here. We're just going to give you whatever you want, all right? 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. Taxi driver number 12 in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, number 12, how's life?
It's pretty hot here today.
I can imagine. What's up?
You know, I've listened to both sides of this, and honestly, I don't trust Kerry and I don't trust Bush. And the thing, there may be some truth on both sides, but one thing that kind of bugs me, two things, is the fact that I guess Kerry had an abbreviated tour of duty in Vietnam. He wasn't there, what, 13 months like a lot of other guys were.
Actually, he had two tours of duty in Vietnam. He had a full first tour of duty, but he didn't see combat. He was on a boat offshore, and then he volunteered for combat in his second tour.
And also the fact that, you know, this may sound conspiratorial, but both Bush and Kerry are a member of the same Yale fraternity.
Yeah, Skull and Bones.
And it makes me think that there may be some component to that as far as, you know, I think they're elitist. They're members of the same good old boys club, and something smacks is the fact that they may be more or less on the same side, and we're led to believe that they're you know, it's like playing good cop, bad cop. That's how I think of it. He's just, you know, an opportunistic. Kerry's an opportunistic ladder climbing gold digger, and Bush is an old money elitist. That's the way I look at it. And I don't trust either one of them really.
Okay, well, consider for a moment. Number one. One of the main charges made against John Kerry is that he's the most liberal senator in the United States Senate, and that he absolutely and consistently votes as liberal. And then at the same time, his attackers say, "But he flip flops." I mean, how can so if he's absolutely consistent?
He does kind of flip flop, and quite honestly, most politicians have a slime coating that their primary goal is not to be consistent on issues. Their primary goal is to obtain power through office.
Yeah, well,
and I really think that Bush and Kerry have that in as a big check mark on, you know, their what they want to do.
Yeah.
And
I would frankly rather number 12 have somebody who is willing to say, you know, I was wrong before on that, and I'm changing my position to this, than have somebody say, I can't remember ever having made a mistake, and 1,000 people are dead as a result of it.
Sure, I think it's a good idea. If you can, you know, anybody, any politician or person who can say they screwed up and, you know, they're just as flawed as anybody else is fine. But
the other point that I'd make, number 12, is that I think, you know, two of our most noble presidents in the 20th century were Teddy Roosevelt and Franklin Roosevelt, a Republican and a Democrat, and who were they weren't as closely related as, you know, they were like distant third cousins or something like that. Didn't know each other growing up, anything like that. And both of them were as wealthy as John Kerry or George W. Bush. And both of them, in both cases, I think in some, and John Kennedy as well. I think in all three of these cases, you've got people who said, you know, they essentially, I don't want to say they turned their back on their class, as it were, but they really were concerned about the average working people in America, because they knew that even for the rich people to have a decent quality of life, you have to have a strong middle class in America. Otherwise, you've got,
sure,
you know, the teeming multitudes, and you've got chaos. And George W. Bush hasn't figured that out. I mean, I think that his family is still sucking up to huge corporate interests that are going to pay them off and do whatever they want and all that sort of thing. And it's just, you know, it's just not healthy. Number 12.
I agree with you on that. You know, that's a very good example there with the Roosevelts. And I think basically both, and you got to look at the fact that I don't really think either one of these candidates, quite honestly, is the primary interest is the American people. It is.
It may be or it may not be number 12. I'm sorry, we're out of time here, but we've got to decide between one or the other of them. And for me, that decision's pretty clear. I appreciate your call. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman program. Stick around. We'll be right back.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Protesters are demanding we bring our troops home from Iraq immediately, but we can't do that. You see, the Iraqis are very hospitable, and the new leader we selected for them has asked our troops to stay. If we brought them home now, we would risk insulting our hosts. And then who would be there to keep an eye on things while we extract our oil from below their soil? And there have been complaints about American mercenaries torturing Iraqi prisoners, but who are you going to trust to soften them up so they can lead us to all those missing weapons of mass destruction? The government? Or a private security firm that can do the dirty work more efficiently for less money with less accountability? Privatization. It works. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
I'm Sarah Turner, and this is a WIN feature story. It's day three of a five-day strike by healthcare workers throughout Washington State. 1,700 nurses and medical technicians are seeing their health care threatened by their employer, Group Health Cooperative. SEIU District 1199 Northwest called the strike in response to company demands that employees' premium costs increase by 12%. Chris Barton is a 30-year veteran nurse and secretary treasurer of the local.
The amount of money that is being spent on the whole effort of trying to maintain patient care during a strike is phenomenal. So it's pretty clear to us that this is not just an economic issue also for the employer. This is one in which they want to change the whole dynamic of how people pay for health care here. They see this as a strategic move to be able to handle their health care costs at the same time just passing that burden on to the workers.
Barton says that in the past, nurses accepted lower pay for better benefits and believes her union is not only standing up for itself, but drawing the line in the sand for all employees whose health care is being threatened.
Our members understand that they're not only standing up just for themselves, but they're standing up really for the affordable health care that everybody deserves. That in this country, unless we're going to be standing up for this, we're not going to see any change. So that we hope that our actions not only result in a good contract that we can all feel good about, the employer and the workers, but we also hope that this is going to be drawing attention to this issue so that we can have our elected officials be more responsive to this and to get us a good health care plan in this state and in this country.
No further talks are scheduled with a federal mediator. With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you 4.5 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, and Sylvia in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Sylvia, thanks for waiting over the break there. What's up?
Well, I think your show is really great. You bring up a lot of really good points.
Thank you.
And as for two rich people running for president, I think that John Kerry has a lot more heart, and he's got some good ideas for the environment, which I think is real important in this day and age with global warming and oil from the Mideast being a primary fuel source. But there's something that I wanted to state here that I read that there was a report from the Dallas Morning News yesterday that the chief founder of the Swift Boat Veterans, name of Bob Perry, is co-hosting a fundraiser in New York, where President Bush, Karl Rove, and Tom DeLay are all scheduled to attend.
Yeah, just to set the record straight, he's not the founder, he's just the major funder.
He's a major funder, okay.
Yeah.
So he's probably paying for some of these atrocious ads that are going out to...
Oh, absolutely. He put $200,000 in.
So I think that's kind of interesting that people should know who's behind these ads and that they really are damaging. And
yeah, well, I'm sure that, Americans and Republicans in particular, the reptilian party there, are just shocked, shocked, absolutely shocked. You know, what, the Swift Boat Veterans guys are somehow participating with the Republicans?
Well, I know there's a lot of angry vets out there that think that when he came back, he did a disservice to them. But there was this Tiger Force that was in Vietnam for, I think, 7 months. And they were raping, pillaging, and cutting off limbs and killing large amounts of people in villages. And that is a documented...
Well, and Kerry had this
and
meeting.
And he just came back and said, hey, you know, I don't like what I'm seeing, and, you know, and this is...
Well, it was more than that. He wasn't saying that this is what he had seen. He convened a meeting in Detroit.
He was relaying it.
And he had 150 vets got up and basically made confessions. And on the record said, this is what I did and what my government asked me to do. And Kerry was simply reporting to Congress what these men had told him. And in this
He cannot be blamed for this.
No, and in this new ad, they take his words out of context to make it sound like he's saying that he did it or that he saw it. And you hear the whole thing in context. We played the tape yesterday here on the program.
Oh, I was sorry.
And you hear the whole thing in context and you get it that, you know, what he was saying was just stand-up stuff. Sylvia, we got to go.
I
appreciate
heard you
the call.
In Santa Fe yesterday. You had a nice talk on KSFR.
And I'll be there this weekend. Thanks for the call, Sylvia. We got to go here. Thanks to Louise for producing our program, to Ira for engineering it, to Brad for our music, to Jay for our theme music. Thanks to our sponsors for keeping us on the air, the folks in our chat room for showing up, and you for listening. See you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior.